Blog Talk Radio.
Here we go.
She asked him why
I'm a hairy guy.
And I am too. Yes, good evening and welcome to Erie House, oldie, tiny radio. I'm a host of sorts, one of them anyway, Dale from, Dale K, no less, from Spook Show, here along with...
That would make me a host out of sorts, Dave Binkley from Weird's Really Bad Movie and Spaceship One, and we're here with Coffee Man. No, who is this over here?
Oh, God, I hope
I've
not.
I've never been confused with Cousin It, although I'm a hairy guy. But it is I, Gar the Ghoul, from Horrible Horror, starring Gar the Ghoul. Yeah, there we go. Blabbly.
Hey, is it coincidence that Gar the Ghoul is on a show called Horrible Horror, starring Gar the Ghoul? Is that coincidence or by design?
I was standing in the unemployment line, and I saw the banner, and I thought, maybe that job's got my name on it. Oh.
For a while. Anyway.
For a while. Till they changed the marquee.
Yes. There you go. Hey, we got three hairy stories, swarthy stories, if you will. Or if you won't. Oh. But we've got the weird circle.
I wouldn't say that.
Yeah. We got Johnny Dollar, and we got the shadow tonight. The shadow.
Yep. I think you'd be able to see a hairy shadow, but, you know, I don't know.
You would hope. That would be my ex-wife following me. I don't know.
Maybe if it was wet and hairy, you could smell it. But I don't know if you could see it.
Is there anything worse than wet dog? Ugh.
There's
that smell for you. Good thing we don't have our radio show in Smell-O-Rama. Blah.
Yeah.
All right. He's coming
if it
down
wasn't
from the coffee.
For my hairy dog, my hairy wet dog. Yeah.
Want to thank some folks
for 4 years in college.
Want to thank some folks for listening live this early in the show. Fogsbane, GGSI Paper, and Rebecca from our
Rebecca.
Thanks for listening live tonight. I hope you enjoy our radio, and we got a whole lot of it.
Okay, what do I got?
We do a lot of it. Hey Gar, I was wondering, have you ever been to Schenectady?
It only in your dreams. I have no idea.
Why would he have gone to Schenectady?
I haven't been there either. Maybe it was two other guys. I was just thinking.
About that time.
I should have made Dale my straight man. Why didn't I make you my straight man?
But don't ask me why.
Because he don't know.
That's right. That's my boilerplate answer for the night.
I'm just a hairy guy. Oh boy. Yes.
I'm glad to see Weird Circle coming back to that show. That's one of my favorite hosted radio programs.
Yes. Weird Circle, and there was another one called The Magic Book or The Weird Book or The Dark Book.
Yeah.
The Sealed Book.
Yeah, that one.
Yeah.
The problem with the sealed book, I can't get the darn thing open.
I know. Yeah. Well, I had the seal.
It would be a long and boring show. Still trying to get the sealed book open.
There you go. Dave Fogsbane says he's about 2 miles from Schenectady.
And we're sorry. No.
We apologize ahead of
time.
Well,
I guess somebody has to be.
I guess. I don't know. I thought Dave was going to rent a van. We were going to Schenectady. I don't know.
Well, there's got
to
be a worse place, like, say, in Northeast Ohio that's worse than Schenectady.
Parma?
Hey, he said Parma. You see, folks, in Ohio, if you say Parma, you must play a polka. That's just how it rolls.
Someone stole a kishka.
Yeah, someone did.
Didn't I get my kishka?
Is that Is that Binghamton, Alabama there? Rayo.
Yes,
Rayo,
they have Kishkas in Birmingham, Alabama.
Yeah.
I would say Alabama. Yeah.
Alabama, yeah. They got the Kishkas there.
Kishkas.
That's where they're ordering them from.
Hey, Linda Lou joins us in the chat as well.
Yes,
hi, thanks for joining us.
Hi, Linda Lou. Bleep, bleep.
Hey, Gail, I found something very unique coming out of Cleveland this week here.
Besides pollution, what?
No, it's from 1965 when what is now WTM, which was originally WTM and several other things in between. For a while, it was WKYC Radio.
Yes.
And these two guys... did in 1965 kind of a Chicken Man type thing out of Cleveland. And let me find this thing real quick here.
Let me correct that. We said Birmingham and it's Binghamton in New York.
Yeah. Binghamton in New York.
Yeah.
Oh.
Yeah.
That's
it was owned
by
Bing Crosby and he sold it for some pearls. No?
I don't know.
Okay.
To Ernest Bergman?
No, that was Magic Beans. That was Magic Beans.
Oh, Magic Beans. Oh, yeah, there we go. Blair Blair. Magic Beans.
There it is. Okay, it's on the bottom. So here it is. They did several, many hundred of these, from what I understand. And very short bits, in a sense, like Chicken Man was, which was all the rage of that kind of short features. So this is coming to us from Northeast Ohio, none other than Congo Kurt.
I remember Congo Kurt.
Listen as the drums speed up adventure.
Listen as the drums speed up excitement.
Listen to this call for the most speed up hero ever. Congo Kurt. Today's violent story in just a moment, but first...
Hey, gang, it's ready now. Congo Kirk's new jungle toy, Rare Rhino.
And what fun you'll have with Rare Rhino. This 5-ton toy comes complete with a tribe of pygmies.
And here's how you play with Rare Rhino.
Just roll the pygmies at his outstretched mouth. And if you can hit it...
Rare Rhino chews them up and moves back 2 feet and says, ah,
but... If you miss Rare Rhino with the pygmies...
Rare Rhino growls, moves forward, and knocks down your living room and kitchen.
Remember, to get Rare Rhino, send us no ridiculous box tops or silly kid stuff slogan.
Just forge dear old dad's signature on a blank check, and in the space marked dollars, neatly print the numbers 950.
Then send to Congo Kurt, my hero, Walla Walla, Washington.
And now for today's adventure.
Yesterday, when we left Congo Kurt, he and the beautiful Veronica were trapped in quicksand. Listen.
Oh, Congo Kurt, I'm sinking fast.
Me too.
Oh, what can we do? In a minute, we'll be swallowed up.
Look, Veronica.
All along, Congo Kurt.
It's my faithful guide boy, Shango, and he has a rope with him.
Oh, but Congo, there's not enough time to pull us both from this quicksand.
Then there's only one thing to do. Shango, throw the rope to Veronica.
Oh, Congo Kurt, you're so...
No, Veronica, hold the rope taut while I drag myself up on the shore.
Will Veronica be able to keep the rope taut enough for Congo to reach safety?
Be listening tomorrow, boys and girls, for another thrill-packed adventure of... Congo!
Hey, GDSI Paper reporting some audio problems, and that's a shame. You missed some classic radio from our youth, Congo Kurt.
Yeah, now you may have been able to hear that, but I was in Buffalo at the time this was on here. And
I think it made its way to Cleveland. I remember Congo Kurt, so I know it made its way to Cleveland somehow.
No, it was. They were two disc jockeys from Cleveland, Ohio, from WKYC Radio. Here we are. This comedy series, it says in here, brackets, similar to Chicken Man, was written and performed by WKYC-DJs Harry Martin and Spex Howard. It included spoofs and commercials for children's toys. So there you go.
Must have been listening to KYC before I discovered Wixie 1260, and that was back in the 60s into the early 70s, a very popular Cleveland AM radio station playing all the current hits of the day. But we've got some hits of the elder days with some old-time radio. Where shall we start, gentlemen?
Smack you right in the puss.
yeah, let's go.
Thanks. May I have another?
One lump or two?
Let's start a little on the light side with Johnny Dollar. This one's called Lost by a Hair. The Lost by a Hair matter. And we'll get creepier as we go with our tales. Dave, any inside scoop on Johnny Dollar this particular episode?
This is from 59, so this would have been our favorite and everybody's favorite Johnny Dollar, Bob Bailey, Mr. Robert Bob Bailey.
Good.
We don't want to give away the plot, so we'll leave it at that.
So let's begin with part one, and this episode is from?
August 9th, 1959.
From Hollywood, it's time now for...
Johnny Dollar.
Fred Starkey.
Starkey?
Worldwide Mutual out here in Columbus, Ohio.
Oh, sure, Fred. How are you?
Okay, Dollar, if you're free for a couple of days, I'd like to have you come on out here.
Oh, what's it all about?
This is George Hemingway Tilford. Ever hear of her?
Tilford? No, I don't think so.
Pretty wealthy, especially since a fire a few months ago. It destroyed a big lumber yard that her husband left to her. And Dollar, she wants to see you right away.
Did she tell you why?
No, she's being very mysterious about it.
Something to do with that lumberyard fire, I suppose.
Well, she simply wouldn't say, but she insists on having you come out to see her.
Well, as long as your company won't quibble over the expense account.
Yes, I guess we're stuck for it.
Plus, my usual fee, of course.
Well, now, that depends on what you mean by usual.
Let's talk about it when I get there.
CBS Radio brings you Bob Bailey in the exciting adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account. America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar to the Worldwide Mutual Insurance Company, Columbus, Ohio office. Following is an account of expenses incurred during my investigation of the Lost by a Hair matter. Expense account item 14175, plane fare from Hartford to New York to Columbus, Ohio. It was after 2 a.m. when the big silver bird dropped me off at Port Columbus Airport. Item 2, 250 for a taxi into the Deschlick Hilton. There was no time to rouse Fred Starkey out of bed, so item 3, 1420 for a nightcap, a comfortable room there in the hotel, and a kind of brunch late the next morning. So late, as a matter of fact, that I had to wait for Starkey to come back from his lunch before I could see him at the office of Worldwide Mutual. See him and ask him questions.
Sorry, Dollar, but she just won't say.
Yeah, well, now look, Fred, I like to know something about a case I've come this far to handle.
I'm not even sure there's a case here.
Well, you told me that she owned a big lumber yard that had burned down some months ago.
Exactly 9 weeks ago.
All right, how much insurance?
Dollar, it was a total loss. It cost the company $330,000.
Wow, wait.
Fortunately, it was underinsured.
Underinsured?
Well, these days, the ground alone out there is worth that much.
Out where?
It's near Minerva Park.
Arson, by any chance?
No. No sign of it whatsoever.
She, possibly need the money?
Hardly. Her husband left her over $250,000 in securities when he died a couple of years ago.
No. Nothing suspicious at all, huh?
Except that suspicious mind of yours. Now, listen, Johnny, I didn't say her wanting to see you has anything to do with that fire. That was your idea. Maybe she just wants a look at you. A great admirer of yours, I understand.
Oh, sure.
Well, do you always expect to find arson, fraud, or murder, some sort of crime whenever somebody calls on you?
No, not always. Well, that's the way it usually turns out.
But don't you see, if this had something to do with her insurance, she would have said as much.
But if it hasn't, why did she ask for me?
Well, I told you.
You told me what?
Oh, I don't know. I don't know why she wants to see you, but I'm willing to bet that it has nothing to do with that fire.
$500?
$500.
Fred, how do I get there?
Item four, a $50 deposit on a rental car, and I drove north on Cleveland Avenue, that's Route 3, to the pleasant little town of Minerva Park. The Tilford home, while not a mansion, was a large stone and stucco affair with plenty of trees and well-kept lawns. All in all, a real nice place in good condition.
Yeah. Oh!
The surprise was the widow Tilford, in her middle 60s, I guess, but with a sparkle in her eye that made you feel she ought to be 25 years younger. She was dressed in well-tailored sport clothes. Her hair was gray, but cut in a short bob. And her subtle use of makeup made her look like a million.
Johnny Dollar.
Mrs. Tilford?
That's right. And, Johnny, I'm such a fan of yours and that radio program that I hear every Sunday on WBNS that, well, I'll break down and confess that about a year ago I wrote and asked for your picture.
Ah. Oh.
And you wrote me the nicest letter when you sent it.
Oh, of course. Grace Tilford.
That's right. And when you started off the letter with Dear Grace, why, it made me feel almost young again.
I know something. I think you are pretty young, Mrs. Tilford.
Oh, one look at you, Johnny, and I wish I was. But with this old heart of mine hitting on only about one cylinder. Come in.
Yeah, sure.
And now this. We're going to bypass the living room and sneak into the library.
Sneak in?
Yes. So that we can talk alone for a little while. You see, your three suspects are there in the living room. You see?
Just, what do you mean by suspects?
Right in here, Johnny, and they won't disturb us.
Okay.
Now, sit down and be comfortable.
Thanks.
Now, Johnny, I suppose you're curious about why I sent for you.
Yeah, well, according to Fred Starkey, it's all a big mystery.
Oh, mystery's right. Was right. But, Johnny, I've solved it.
Oh?
Yes. The mystery of why my lumber yard burned down a few weeks ago.
You mean it was set?
That's exactly what I mean. I had no proof in the beginning, no reason to think it was set, but I have now.
By whom, Mrs. Tilford?
Oh, I wish you'd call me Grace, Johnny. Just to flatter me a bit.
Okay, sure. But who set the fire? All right. You said three suspects out there in the living room.
That's right. Would you like to go in and meet them? And then pick out the one it is?
You say that one of those three people sitting out there in the living room set that lumberyard fire?
Yes. Johnny and I collected $330,000 on it after all. The police and firemen had found nothing to indicate arson.
Well, believe me, it's hard to spot in a fire like that.
Then I got to thinking about those three, about how each of them could profit by it.
Possible that all three could have had a hand in it?
Oh, those three get together on anything. Trust each other. Oh, never, never.
Okay, then.
Then a couple of days ago, I learned something. Proof that one of them did it.
Which one?
If I know you, you're clever enough to find out.
But if you already know, and suppose the one who did it knows that you know.
Oh, not a chance. At least I don't think there is. And at least none of them has made any move against
me. But if one of them, you better tell me which one.
Well, now, John, do you ever tell who's the guilty one on your radio program right at the beginning?
Oh, now, let's face it, this is a little bit different. If you're holding out just for the sake of a big dramatic climax.
Oh, well, yes.
Oh, come on. Now, listen, Miss Tilford.
Grace.
All right, Grace. But now, please, listen to me.
You listen, Johnny. I said I have proof, but I have to be absolutely sure. And there's where you can not only help me, but you'll know exactly how to proceed, how to take him in, or her, without danger to the rest of
us. Listen, will you? If the guilty one knows that you know, you might be in pretty serious danger.
Even with you around?
Yes, even with me around.
Well, I'm simply not going to tell you until you've met them and drawn your own conclusions.
Okay, then let's get in it.
All right. The middle-aged man is Harry W. Shelder, my husband's business manager before he passed on. He's not only very clever, but his sole interest in life is in money.
I see.
He did very well for my husband, but I've always felt he was really looking out for himself.
But why set off the lumber yard?
Because replaced by homes and stores and supermarkets, it could be worth millions, he said.
Ah, and you refused to do that?
Yes. The lumber company had been in our family for generations. Gave me all the money I could want, so I wouldn't change it.
What if it just happened to burn to the ground?
Exactly. All of my objections would be wiped out.
Then if he's the one...
Wait, Johnny. Then there's Michael Tilson.
Well, the younger man I noticed in there.
Our adopted son. After college, business college, he tried to make his way, but not very successfully. Actually, he's been living on our bounty the past few years.
A ne'er-do-well, Grace?
Oh, well, he's not very good at anything. His ideas for that property aren't so ambitious as Harry Shelder's, but he's wanted me to sell it out to one of the development companies. And why? Because my husband's will provided that in the event of my death, he'd get half the income from it.
I see.
So he was bitterly opposed to my keeping it as a lumberyard.
Well, motive for one, motive for two. And who's the third, the girl I saw in there?
Nancy Willard, my niece. Ever since her parents died, quite penniless, by the way, we've taken care of her. It's simply out of pity, Johnny, not love. And although I may change it now, she's heir to the bulk of my estate.
Yeah. Well, offhand, I'd say that Michael is the least suspect of the three. Let's go talk to them.
But I'll leave you alone with them. I want to clean up before dinner and wash my hair. It's a mess.
Looks straight to me.
What? Like this?
Okay, okay. You gals have to have something to fuss about, I suppose. Now let's go in and see those folks.
That's part one of Johnny Dollar, The Lost by a Hair Matter.
Yeah, I'm thinking this is an Armed Forces rebroadcast because there are no commercials and it's off rather short because of it, I think. So, yes.
And Johnny Dollar broke the fourth wall in saying that he has a radio program this woman listens to. And it's like,
yeah,
I thought he was an insurance investor. Gator. Investor Gator.
Maybe he has an insurance radio show. Huh, who knows?
Maybe he had an insurance radio. Yeah, so they really kind of, that was odd. And she's a big fan of him, of his show.
Well, it's kind of like a lady that came up to Raymond Burr and said, I love your Perry Mason show. It's just amazing how you never lose a case. And he says, well, that's because you only see the cases I try on Thursday, ma'am, you know.
Yeah, there you go. Exactly.
That's a good one.
I don't know why. Why would that be, Dale? Why would he say something like that?
Why?
If I was ready, I would tell you something like, don't ask me why, 'cause he don't know. I don't. I don't. Don't ask me.
Got nothing.
Yes. Yep, Bob Bailey. My best Johnny Dollar of the two or three guys.
He is.
Handful of guys that played him. He's the guy.
I think he had about half a dozen guys that played Johnny Dollar throughout the years, and nobody comes close to Bob Bailey. Someone may have looked more like what you think Johnny Dollar looked like. But Bob Bailey just did not fill that bill physically.
He looks more like Johnny Dollar on radio.
Yes, exactly. And
Dave, wasn't there a singing detective that also did the Johnny Dollar for like a week and then he quit?
He did the pilot episode, the first pilot for Johnny Dollar.
Okay.
And it was his. It was his to have. That would be, he decided Richard Diamond was a better show
Powell.
For him. With Dick Powell, right? He decided the show, because the show he went to was a show that was written by a very young, exciting writer, producer, the guy that,
Ernest
Julie Andrews. No, it was married to Julie Andrews. I don't know, I can't think of it. Peter, he produced and wrote Peter Gunn. I'm trying to think what, Blake Edwards. Blake Edwards.
Oh.
So he was offered both programs at the same time, but he decided to go with the Richard Diamond private detective.
Most of you don't know this. Gar has pictures of Ernest Borgnine on his walls at home.
Yeah, but we can't describe all of them because some of them, you know, they're not exactly GP rated. You know.
No, there's that one Burt Reynolds-like pose that I find quite disturbing.
I know.
And
nobody wants to see Ernest Borgnine like that.
Yes.
Not even Ernest Borgnine.
No. But he signed
not even
him,
his mother.
So, hey, you know, there was
not even his mother. Well, he did.
Not even his mother. Well, there's a picture of him and his mother. They went duck fishing, whatever that's about. I don't know.
Duck fishing.
Duck fishing, yeah. I don't know.
I don't want to know what they use for bait. I don't want to know.
I don't know. I'm just imagining,
fishing,
you know, Ernest out there going, quack, quack, where the fish? Quack, quack.
Somehow I picture Tim Conway doing the quacking, but I don't know.
He could. You never know. Is his wife Tova in any of them? Yes. She's in 48 of them. I didn't know he had a wife named Tova.
Yeah, I think the pictures are in the Irving Claw collection.
Oh, yeah.
Look that up.
I'm scared to. You have actually frightened Gar the Ghoul.
He was one of Betty Page's photographers. I won't say much more than that.
Yeah, we don't need no more. No, that's enough. You know.
Well, no. What is
Ernest
Borgnine in a tutu
was
rather was
enough
racy
for me? Okay.
In the 50s, so.
That was so racy.
Yep. And let's race on over to part two of Jenny Dollar,
yes,
the Lost by a Hair Matter. We will be back.
Under the circumstances, there was nothing I could do but play along with her little game, her dramatic little mystery matter. But not for too long. On the excuse she had to go up and wash her hair, she left me with them there in the living room. And what a trio.
As I've told you half a dozen times now, Dollar, Mrs. Tilford hasn't long to live. According to her doctor, not more than 5 or 6 years at the most. Don't you see what I mean?
Maybe, Mr. Shelter. Go on.
As long as she's alive and lets me handle things, she can make millions with that property.
And you?
Well, of course, I get a percentage of the capital gains I achieve for her.
And I say those fancy plans of yours are too much of a gamble, Harry.
Just wait,
Michael. I say play it safe. Let somebody else take the risk. That's all. Then all we have to do is... I mean, all Mother has to do is sit by and share in the profits.
A small share instead of all the profits.
With you running things, I'd want a pretty good accounting, Harry.
You think you could handle a project like I have in mind?
One like I have in mind. Nothing to it.
I wouldn't trust your judgment or you, as a matter of fact.
Oh, now stop it, kids. What kind of people will Johnny Dollar think we are? Sorry, Johnny.
Oh, I find this all very interesting, Nancy.
Don't you see, Dollar? Listen to me.
No, you listen, Michael. Every time we get together this way, it's the same old thing. I've said it before, and I say it again. Let Auntie Grace handle things her own way.
Of course. You're well provided for without even having to lift a finger.
That's right, Harry. I'm not one of the hired help.
Nancy, I resent that.
But she does have a point there.
Sure, so go ahead and resent, but... Oh, now, look, it's cocktail time, so let's have Haskell bring in the drinks and talk about other things, or just get quietly loaded. Haskell! Mrs. Haskell!
There's no reason why one of us can't bring...
Don't bother, Harry.
Yes? You called for me, miss?
Bring in the portable bar and plenty of ice cubes.
Yes, ma'am. I'll be after getting it for you right away.
Where's my aunt?
About to get under the hairdryer last time I was up the stairs.
Tell her to come down and join us.
Yes, ma'am, that I will.
And while we're waiting, let's try to be civil to each other.
To say I didn't particularly like these three would be an understatement. And I could picture any one of them having set that fire. For the next few minutes, they simply sat and glared at each other until we heard Mrs. Haskell come running clumsily down the stairs.
Miss Nancy! Mr. Shelby! Mr. Michael!
Haskell! I thought you were going to bring...
Haskell! What's the matter?
It's Mrs. Tilford up there in her room.
Well?
She's dead.
Mrs. Tilford, there in her bedroom, had died alone. Apparently, she'd been sitting under a hairdryer, then simply fallen to the floor, the big professional-looking machine falling beside her. Fortunately, the heating coils had apparently broken before they could set fire to anything. A big hunk of suspicion started building up at the back of my head. But then Dr. Taylor came and pronounced it death from a heart attack.
And I must confess, I certainly didn't... Well, she took such good care of herself. I was certain she'd live on for several years. Well, I'll go downstairs and make up my report and arrange to have the body taken care of.
Well, we won't have to argue about the handling of her affairs anymore. Unless, of course, the court lets me act as executor of her estate. In which case, I warn
you... Harry, how can you be so callous about it?
Oh, the poor dear darling.
Oh, shut up, Haskell.
But Michael's right, Harry.
Oh, sure. I suppose you two are heartbroken about her dying like this.
Alone. She died all alone up here.
Oh, quit.
while we were downstairs trying to pick her apart like a bunch of vultures, in spite of the way she treated all of us.
What do you mean by that, Mike?
We got so much better than we deserved, that's what I mean. All three of us. Harry, never bothering to see her, to come here and be nice to her. Just parked in his office in town, juggling figures to get as much out of her as he could.
Michael, I resent...
I don't care if you do. Heaven only knows how much you've cheated her since Father died.
Only your foster father, remember?
And Nancy. Sitting around here, sponging off her, sweet-talking her, waiting for her to die.
Look who's talking. With all the things she's done for you, Michael, you haven't even had the decency to come and visit her now and then.
Yes, I know.
When was the last time you were here? A month ago, 6 weeks ago, the last time that Harry was here.
Is that true, Mike?
Yes, Mr. Dollar, I'm afraid
But you didn't hesitate to accept the money she kept sending
you. At least I tried to make my own way.
Oh, sure. Big, ambitious little Michael.
Well, what have you done for us?
At least I've stayed here these past few weeks and gone through the motions of being nice to her, kept her company, helped her with her clothes, fixed her hair for her, and, well...
Is that true, Mrs. Haskell?
Yes, sir.
Fixed her hair for her. Big deal.
Miss Manton, Miss Nancy even bought her that big hair-drying machine.
Oh.
And the poor dear loved it so she was washing her hair 3 and 4 times a week.
Now, what's that got to do with what...
Wait
we
a minute.
Discussed?
That's right. If it hadn't been for this crazy machine... She would have been downstairs where we might have helped.
Wait.
Well, don't take it out on the hairdryer,
Michael. I said, wait a minute. My brain was fairly spinning. A news item in the New York papers less than a month ago. A freak accident, 1 in 1 million at a beauty parlor. A professional hairdryer machine, exactly like the one lying here on the floor. There'd been pictures of it, sketches, to show exactly what had happened. A tiny wire had come loose. It shocked the customer so badly that she'd lost consciousness. There'd been a big noise over it. And now here was Mrs. Tilford, a little frail old lady with a heart condition. Yeah, yeah.
What is it, Mr. Dollar?
Yes, Johnny. What's that funny look supposed to mean?
Plenty. Mrs. Haskell, did you ever help Mrs. Tilford with this machine?
Oh, jeez, I'd never even touched that contraption of the devil, sir.
Dollar, this old biddy wouldn't even let Mrs. Tilford install an electric stove. But I failed to... Listen, when was this thing purchased? About 3 weeks ago, I still have the bill for it in my office. Another of Nancy's little tricks gave it to Mrs. Tilford as a gift, but charged it to her account. But I failed to...
Three weeks ago. So when I find the wire on it, it was cut instead of simply broken off when it fell.
Mr. Dollar.
Yeah, and I'm glad you didn't kick this thing anymore, Mike. You see it here? When she clamped this thing on her head, this wire touched her wet scalp.
Oh, now, just... Good heavens.
Then when she turned on the switch, well, that was it. Harry, you haven't been here for weeks.
Well, I know, but I...
Nor have you, Michael. And Mrs. Haskell was afraid to touch the thing. Well?
Nancy.
Yeah, Nancy. You were here, Nancy. And a few weeks ago, when you read in the papers how one of these machines might...
No!
Heaven forbid!
Oh, put it down, Nancy.
No. I'll kill you. I'll kill all of you. Sure, I did it, but nobody will ever know, because none of you will be alive.
That's where you're wrong, Nancy.
Michael. All right, Nancy.
No, let go of me.
Sorry.
Learned a little lesson in clean living from this, Harry?
Yes. Yes, Dollar. I'll call the police.
So Nancy's wild shot busted one of his ribs, but Michael recovered. Nancy, I don't know what the penalty for murder is in Ohio, but believe me, she'll find out the hard way. As for the estate, well, that's up to the courts, too. No doubt much of what might have been Nancy's share will go to the company for that payment on the fire. Expense account total, including the trip back to Hartford, $162.70. Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Star to tell you about next week's story.
Next week, a night in Paris that brings me fun, romance, and a quick brush with that old character known as Death. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, originates in Hollywood and is written, produced, and directed by Jack Johnstone. Heard in our cast were Virginia Gregg, Ellen Cleave, Shirley Mitchell, Ben Wright, Sam Edwards, Harry Bartell, and Lawrence Dobkin. Be sure to join us next week, same time and station, for another exciting story of Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar. This is Jim Matthews speaking.
We hope you got a charge out of that story as much as the lady with the hair dryer. And you know,
I could burn off a couple hairs there.
And you know, you can learn something from listening to these radio shows. I know Gar learned something. Eerie House Radio proudly presents Gar's Moral of the Story.
The drawbacks of greed is it's easy to get, but it's hard. I didn't finish. My gosh. Where's the
I'm sorry, that was a preemptive yodel.
Is that somebody from Parma? What's going on? Let's try again. The drawbacks of greed is it's easy to get, but it's hard to spend. My goodness.
There we go. That's...
And...
You just never know when Dale's going to break out and yodel.
You never know. You never know.
No.
Looks like I picked a bad week to give up amphetamines or something.
So, speaking of amphetamines and capital punishment, I went and I dug this up because I wanted to find out. And apparently, because the program was slated to be in Ohio, and there was a death, there was a murder charge. I wanted to find out, hey, what happens in Ohio in 1959 if you're charged with murder? And it says
Dr.
that
Shepherd.
Yes, it says that previously you could go to the gallows and get hung. You could go to Sparky the electric chair. But currently, the state uses lethal injections for its executions.
Although they can,
if they want to, request electrocution.
Okay.
Oh, yeah. Everybody's dying for that option, literally.
Yeah, it's like, you know. Well, no, I was looking at one, and it said that this is hilarious. This is in Utah. The state authorizes the use of a firing squad in the event that the drugs required for lethal injection are not available.
That's why you
same
stay
thing,
out of
like,
Texas.
Yeah, and in Oklahoma, the firing squad is used only if the lethal injection or the electrocution are found to be unconstitutional. Well, we can't shock you, and we can't inject you, but we'll shoot you.
Yeah.
Okay.
Either way, it's drapery for you.
And if they ever asked me how I'd want to be executed, how I wanted to die, I said, "Oh, how about old age?"
There you go.
I've been in that situation before, and my answer was knock knock jokes.
That is an ugly way to die.
That's inhuman. Gar, you're out of
yes.
your mind.
That's just
inhumane. What sort of country do you hail from with your extreme forms of punishment, you?
That's definitely a Scottish.
That would be definitely a cruel and unusual punishment. That's for sure.
Yes.
It's from Scotland. I'm going to tell you knock, knock, Jack.
There's really only... one worse form of execution, and that's having to listen to
when they brought that out and that killed aliens, I was like, you guys are brain children. That was amazing. Either that or they're from Parma.
But by day three, you'd be clawing your eyes out. Come on, admit it.
I will forever love the Indian love song or whatever that's called.
Remember, I have your mailing address. Tempt ye not fate. We got two. Count them. Two.
We have two more.
Terrific
two more.
Tale.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
Why not the
weird
circle?
Weird circle? You betcha. Good old weird circle in... transcribed for syndication by good old NBC to send around to different stations and such, and didn't like the paying author, so they took classic stories from classic writers who they didn't owe royalties to, and came up with these wonderful tales.
Yeah. This one kind of has a creepy title. The Rope of Hair.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Oh, it brings up pleasant.
And it isn't even about Rapunzel. No.
No.
It's not about Rapunzel.
No, she's not even.
She's not even mentioned.
Someone
no.
from someone from Parma's in there, though.
You're jumping me with this, Gar. I'm not ready. When you say Woo-hoo! Things like Parma.
Parma!
Yip. You have to say that during a polka. That was abrupt.
That was abrupt.
Yeah.
Goodness. It's like it's right in front of me and I can't see it.
I can't
see it
because
we're on the radio.
My hair is a fright. It is. Gets in my eyes, you know. I can't see. And it's not just in the morning. Oh no. I'm Harry Noon and
Nighty Night Night.
Yeah. I've got that problem too. I'm just glad I don't have to shave my back, you know, because that's just nasty.
Yeah.
You reminded me of my ex-wife again. Will you please stop? Oh, that's horrible.
Yeah,
but
yep,
a nice creepy tale in the weird circle. Rope of Hair. This one is from...
You had to do that. April 16th, 1944.
And we'll be back.
The Weird Circle. In this cave, by the restless sea, we are met to fall from out the past stories strange and weird.
Phantoms of a world gone by speak again the immortal tale, The Rope of Hair.
I am often puzzled by the three processes, love, hate, and death, which perhaps more than the others influences our minds. I have learned but little more of them in my life. Perhaps the words and secrets of the three were in the diary in the old chateau. I have never known that. But I have learned fear. I have become afraid of the night. It was long ago when I was in garrison at Rouen. I was walking one evening along the quay when I observed a man who looked up at me from thoughtful contemplation of the slowly moving water. I hesitated, surprised at something, some recognition in his eyes.
Victor.
Yes?
Victor, don't you know me?
Why, Jacques, can it be you, Jacques Lafontaine?
Yes, Victor, of course.
Well, Jacques, I can't believe it's really you.
Then even my oldest friend doesn't know me.
But it's been so long, Jacques, so long since our last meeting. It's 5 years since Jean Duroc's ball.
It's changed me, then.
Well, at first I didn't recognize you, but in 5 years...
In 5 years, most people don't grow gray and stoop, do they, Victor? I hated the thought of coming to you like this.
But as officers, we must soon have had business together anyway.
Then you haven't even heard that...
Heard what?
That I had resigned my commission, left the glory of our country in the hands of the dashing...
You had a fine career ahead of you. Your position, your influence, they pointed to everything ahead.
And now perhaps everything is behind. Is that it, Victor?
Oh, life is never as bitter as that.
For men as young as we, a great deal lies ahead.
For a man who has written his own destiny in one moment? No.
What's happened, Jack? Can't you tell me? Perhaps supper, a little entertainment. The city will be lively tonight. It'll do you good to forget your troubles.
Thank you, Victor, but we've been walking toward my rooming house. I hoped you might dine with me. We can talk quietly there.
Because we're old friends, yes. For anyone else, though, well, the evening is young and there are other things to do in the city.
Just this one evening. Can't you, Victor?
If that's what you want, Jacques, my time is yours.
Good. Here. This is the place, here.
This?
I know it's not a good section of the city. The place is run down, but it's comfortable. And with your soldiers quartered here, it was hard to find any place to stay at all. Come on in.
Let me follow you, Jacques. It's so dark in here, I can't see where to go.
I'll get some candles. There. Now, come on up this way. My room is right here at the top of the stairs. This door.
Well, go on, open it. What's the matter?
Shh.
What is it, Jacques?
I don't know.
Here, let me have the candle. It'll shake out of your hand. Now what's happened?
There's something. Somebody in there.
Well, open the door and find out.
Perhaps we better not.
If there's somebody in your room, we'll find out who it is.
No, Victor, please. Well, please, Victor.
What's frightening you so?
Oh, good evening, monsieur.
Oh, Mrs. Dupré.
Yes, monsieur, did I startle you? You see, it was time for supper, so I brought it up to you, monsieur. I lit the candles in your room. I know
yes.
that you...
Yes, thank you, Mrs. Dupré, and bring another, please. The captain's dining with me.
But certainly, monsieur. Immediately, monsieur.
Come in. Come in, Victor. We'll wait just a few minutes until she comes back.
I think your Mrs. Dupré was as frightened as you were. Do you always frighten each other?
No. No, it was just that I didn't expect...
Jacques, seriously, what's on your mind? Certainly you aren't living in this place from choice. It's so near your own chateau. Why aren't you there?
That's what I wanted to talk to you about, Victor.
Well, if it's money, Jacques, why say so? You know you needn't go through all this. I'll gladly...
It's more than money.
Well, then, love?
Love, Victor? In the circle of things, where does hate end and love begin? Can you answer that?
Did you want me to come up here to talk riddles, Jacques?
Well, it was love, Victor. The most beautiful woman in the world.
Well, come on, out with it. Don't just sit there picking at the front of your tunic as though you were covered with dog hairs. What's this all about?
What?
Ever since we sat down, you've been pulling imaginary hairs out of your jacket there. Can't you sit still for a minute and relax?
Oh, was I? Well, I'm sorry, Victor, but you see, I'm going to ask a favor of you that I'd hate to ask anyone else.
Anything you say, Jacques.
You see, several years ago, right after you last saw me, I was married to the most beautiful woman in the world. Oh, life was a sweet thing. We were the happiest couple in France.
And what happened?
She died, Victor. She died, and now she's dead and rotting in her grave. That's what death does to people, isn't it, Victor? She died just 1 year after I'd married her. Just 1 year of terrible happiness. Terrible because I guess no man has a right to so much. Well, on the day she died, I locked the door to our room, left the chateau, and as you see, Victor, I can never make myself go back.
And you want something?
Would you do it? Would you go back to our room there, Victor?
What do you want me to do?
In the right-hand drawer of the desk in our room, there is a book. A diary which right now can mean more to me than anything else in the world. You'll know it because on it, it's marked with my crest across the front. Will you go?
I'll go tomorrow. I'll be free then.
I'll wait here until you come back with it. Oh, Victor!
Your supper, monsieur.
Oh.
I've brought it up as quickly as I could. Will that be all right, monsieur? You see the...
Just... Put it on the table, Mrs. Dupré. Thank you.
There, monsieur. I hope you enjoy it, monsieur.
Victor, sit down there. I'll write a note to the caretaker at the chateau and get you the keys to the room and to the desk.
Hasn't he the keys?
No one has a key to that room but me.
Why, Jacques? Is it haunted?
No.
Oh, come, come, Jacques. Your nerves are all on edge. Let's go out. There's a little place.
No, thank you, Victor. I'll stay here until tomorrow. Tomorrow, when you've come back with the diary.
I left him then, sunk into that attitude of deep concentration I had noticed as he stared into the dark waters of the Seine. For a while, I forgot Jacques. The strange depression and fear that marked his attitude had shocked me. The way he sat, almost afraid to speak, plucking those imaginary hairs from the front of his tunic like a weak, frightened child. Not like the stalwart, ambitious young man I had known as a companion in boyhood. A young man, if ever there was one, destined to become the pride of his regiment. In the morning, my ride across the fields and through the cool summer woods somehow filled me with an intoxicating happiness. I took with me for a companion a Lieutenant Laroque, a friend of mine from the regiment, and I was thankful later for his sensible company. But in the exhilaration of the moment, I almost forgot the gloomy implications of my trip.
There's that old chateau, Captain. Have you noticed it before?
That's where we're going.
To that place?
Yes, I have an errand there. You know the place, then?
Well, I've passed by it several times, never stopped. I thought it was deserted until the other day when I saw an old man standing by the gate.
Caretaker, isn't he?
I guess so. He threw stones at one of my soldiers who tried to stop for water. Chased him away before he could get inside the gates. I almost had to have the man thrown in jail to calm the soldier's feelings.
Well, he's not on guard today.
He's not at work either. Look at the condition of this place. Why, the gate's practically rusted off its hinges.
I can remember when this lawn was as smooth as velvet. And every path was well kept. But it's not my worry. Oh, where is this confounded caretaker anyway?
I'll see, Captain. Hey there!
No sign of life? I'll join you.
Is anybody here?
Try another door, Laroque.
Yes, sir. I'll try this one around the side.
Well?
You the caretaker?
Yes, I am Pierre. What is it you want?
I have a letter here.
Well, there's no one here. Can't you see that? This place is deserted.
The letter is for you.
Well, then give it here.
Stay here, you. Take off your hat when you're addressing an officer.
Never mind, Laroque. Let him read the letter. I'm anxious to get this over. Military dignity doesn't have much place here.
What's that? Well, it once did. This was the proudest house in Normandy.
Never mind, Pierre. Read the letter.
Well, I have read it.
Well?
Well? What do you want?
You ought to know. Your master's orders are there. I want to enter the chateau.
Are you going into his room?
Are you trying to put me through an examination?
But, I'll go and see if it is prepared, if it is all right.
That won't be necessary.
But it has not been entered since the death. I'd better see you.
But you see, Pierre, I have the key and you have not. Now step back. Let us go through.
Yes, Captain. Right through my kitchen there. That door enters the main hall.
Come on, Ralph.
Coming, sir.
This door, Pierre?
Yes, Captain. Through there and up the stairs.
Oh, look, Captain. Look at the size of this hall.
Yes, Laroque. And look at the dust. Must be half an inch thick on that table.
You know, it must have been magnificent here once.
I knew it well when it was. Here, the stairs are over here. Let's go up. Somehow I don't like the place so much now.
Oh. The old man has shut the door down there. I don't think he likes us very much.
We're just invading his privacy, that's all. Anybody would be strange stuck in this place.
Well, I certainly wouldn't like it.
This is the door, I think.
Why, the air hasn't been changed in here for years.
What's that? Smells like a tomb.
It's dark enough to be one. I'll open that shutter over there. Oh, it's stuck, Captain.
Never mind. My eyes are getting used to the dim light now, anyway. Laroque?
Yes, Captain.
You'd better go stand guard outside the door so that our real menace, the caretaker, doesn't come up and interrupt us. I'll get the diary I'm after, and we'll get out of here.
Very well, Captain. I'll shut the door so you won't be disturbed.
We'll return to the Weird Circle in just a little bit. That was part one, and at our current pace, we should have time for a little bonus radio for you, too, before the night is through.
Woohoo! I like bonus. I like bonus material. Bonus time, bonus time, bonus time.
That's right. That's
but, not
what,
but not yet.
That's what but we're working yet. Towards at our current pace, says the timekeeper.
The keeper of the buttons, yes.
Yes, who sometimes gets disoriented on a Friday night.
A half inch of dust, they must have a lot of kitty litter around there.
Yeah, it's almost like my basement. You know, I work from my basement, and you know what? Sometimes all my, like, skulls and pumpkins and monster models and robots, they stare at me.
Do they have hair?
Some do. Some do.
Okay.
Yes.
Nothing better than a hairy skull, I tell you.
No, that one's not ripe yet. If it has a little hair, it's not ripe.
Ripe yet.
I'm hairy high and low.
Probably more than everyone wanted to know.
he's hairy high and low?
Yes.
No autograph pictures, please.
Hairy high and low.
No. No, there'll be no strategically placed cowboy hat pictures of me. That's my present to America, to not do that.
you mean you're not like the, uh-huh. the naked cowboy that walks around through New York City in his underwear? You're not like
no.
that?
No.
Oh, okay.
No. no, I can't even leave the house without socks.
Well, I'm hoping you're wearing more than that. You could get arrested.
Well, you know, as I get older, one may forget from time to time.
I've been working from home for far too long, Dale. Far too long.
Yes, far too long. I don't know. I like it. I'd like to retire from here. And I don't
like
have too far to go.
From your home?
From my job.
If you retire from your home, you're...
From working
from your home,
in general.
Does that put you in a retirement home?
No, because when I retire, I'm going to explode. It might be radio every damn day. One never knows.
One never knows.
It can happen. And the other thing that can happen.
And that's how Dale lost his retirement fund.
Yeah. No. It wouldn't cost me a penny more than it does now to do it every day. I get 2 hours a day if I want it. Who has the time? All right, so let's wrap up the Weird Circle. Rope of hair.
Rope of hair. Woo.
I was trying to sound brave. There are times when the uniform of a captain forces courage. But I did feel better with Laroque guarding the door. A draft from the still-shuttered window was beginning to freshen the atmosphere. I opened the drawer of the desk and began fumbling among the litter of papers there. I found the diary, just as Jacques said I would, in a plain packet with his crest on the face of it, a crest that had been the bravest in France. The breeze from the window stirred the hangings behind me, but engrossed as I was in finding the diary, I paid but little attention to the stirring in the room.
Yes, there it is. You have really come for it. But you are not Jacques. I shall try to remember. He should have come. Not you. No. You are not Jacques. But you will do as well.
For endless time, I say, we faced each other there. But only for a moment, really. The woman seated herself in a chair. Her white garment made no sound as she put her hand to her head. She tried to stroke the long black hair that hung almost to the floor. It was black, but with a blackness that has no light, no life. In her other hand, she had a comb. She held it toward me.
Monsieur, you can do me a great service. I am suffering. Oh, I am suffering so. They will not comb my hair. You will comb my hair. You will comb my hair. Oh, I am suffering.
I took the comb from her hand and lifted that long hair. That hair which gave my skin a feeling of awful cold. A feeling of handling snakes. Cold. Cold and dead. The feeling still clings about my fingers. I handled that icy hair. I twisted it. I braided it. I bound it and unbound it. And while I let that horrible mane run through my fingers, she sighed and, trance-like, began to talk, forgetting, perhaps, that I was not Jacques.
Ah, that's better. The mirror is gone now. The mirror in which I watched you so many times combing my hair. And with what adoration in your eyes. Your brave, strong fingers playing there in the hair of a weak woman. So brave, so strong. Jacques loves me. Jacques loves me. That was the song that my heart sang when first we were here like this. I love Jacques. I love Jacques. That was the song I thought was echoed back. Pride and strength and killing. Yes, I saw you kill Jacques. Once I saw you kill for power. Power, strength, pride, being a soldier, being strong, they were your idols. What does a weak woman want of those things? When you brought me here, Jacques, my head was high. My pulses beat with joy at the peace and happiness I expected. But you'd always been strong, Jacques. Always strong and brutal with the strength you adored. Then when I saw you kill Jacques, I knew that the fascination of hate was my love. Hatred of you, of whom I need fear nothing because you loved me. Hate, not love. I was fascinated too, Jacques, when I wrote these things. Wrote them in that diary you're taking. Wrote of my hatred and my growing fear of you. Then that day, I watched you in the mirror as you braided my hair. Braided it into a strong rope. And because I'd written that I hated you, slip it slowly, so slowly and calmly, over my head and around my neck. But you will never do it again, will you, Jacques? Because now, Jacques, you're going to comb it free again. Comb it free when I come to you for that diary. Yes, Jacques is going to comb it free again. I shall come for the diary, Jacques.
Laroque! Laroque!
What is it, Captain?
This closet door. That woman went in there. For the love of heaven, open it quickly.
Captain, it's locked, bolted outside here.
Can't be. She went in there.
Who?
That woman who was here.
Well, no one came in here, so perhaps it was a shadow.
No, Laroque. I saw her. I heard. Can I be mad?
I'll break that shutter, Captain. We'll have some light.
And the closet door was bolted. In the light that flooded the room, I began to feel foolish. There was no sign, no indication, except for an overturned chair, that I had not been alone the whole time. With more calmness than I felt, we descended the great stair, crossed the huge dusty hall, and were at last out in the fresh air. We did not see Pierre again when we left the chateau. We drew rein before my lodgings. The groom took our horses.
Well, sir, the ride has been very pleasant. But, Captain, do you feel all right?
Laroque, I'm going up to my room. I need a rest. Will you Will you deliver this diary to my friend? Here's the address. Tell him anything you like. Tell him I'm ill, sunstroke, anything at all. I'll see him later.
Of course, Captain. Just a moment, sir.
What is it? Why are you looking at the front of my coat like that?
Why, those hairs.
Hairs?
Yes, Captain. All twisted in the buttons. They're long and black like a woman's.
Yes, there were the same dead long hairs twisted in the buttons of my jacket. I pulled at them, every nerve in my body revolting at their cold feeling. Slowly, one by one, I pulled them off, dropping them from my fingers like poison things.
Can I help you, Captain?
Could he help me? No, but there was another he could help. I remembered how Jacques had sat like a bashful child, pulling at the imaginary hairs in the front of his coat, begging me to get that diary to him. No, Laroque. But take this diary to my friend quickly. Quickly, Laroque.
Yes, sir.
It was better in my room. Somehow I could think there. But Jacques, his fear and his worry haunted me. A few hairs still clung to my jacket. Absently, I pulled them out and dropped them from the window, every nerve in my body revolting at their cold feeling. Then, with a sudden resolve, I went into the street again and headed toward Jacques' lodgings. I knew that I had to talk to him about what had happened. I hurried across the city. Laroque came toward me a few steps from Jacques' house.
Captain.
Have you delivered the diary already, Laroque?
I left it in his room, Captain. The gentleman wasn't at home.
Not there? He promised to wait until I got back.
The room was empty. The concierge had not seen him go out, Captain, but she had been in the basement and he might have slipped out without her seeing him.
Very well, Laroque. I'll go and see him.
Do you wish me to come, sir?
No, no, no. You go on. I'll wait for him to come back.
Very well. It's that house right there, sir.
That house right there. That house right there. As though I wouldn't know that dirty doorway, those warped steps. Every detail of the last 24 hours seemed to have fixed itself like an etching in my brain.
Yes, monsieur?
I must see Monsieur Jacques. Monsieur Jacques.
But he's not in, monsieur. There was another gentleman just a few minutes ago.
He must be here. Let me in.
But, monsieur...
He must be.
But, monsieur, I tell you that he's...
This is his door, isn't it?
He's not in, monsieur.
We'll see about that. Jacques. Be quiet. Stand there.
He's dead. Oh, monsieur, he's dead. In my house.
His hand is cold. Is there a doctor near here?
Yes, monsieur. I'll call him.
Jacques was sitting huddled in a chair, a surprised look on his face. But he was white. White and somehow shriveled. I looked around for the diary which Laroque had delivered, but it was not to be seen. Some touch of the fear I had felt in facing the woman at Jacques' chateau chilled me again. After only a moment, I heard voices outside in the passageway.
It is here, monsieur. Right. A gentleman came and we found him so.
All right, then take me in now.
It doesn't seem it could be possible. It was only a few minutes ago, and I saw with my own eyes that Monsieur Jacques was not in his room. It could not be.
Be quiet, please.
It isn't possible.
Quiet, please. Pardon, monsieur. What has happened here?
I don't know anything more than she has told you. We came in and found him this way, in the chair.
Let's see. His pulse? Yes, he's dead, no doubt of that. His hand is cold already.
But there was no way in which...
The man must have led an active life. He was not very old, and yet...
The doctor leaned, peering over Jacques' body. His hand reached out slowly toward the front of the coat. He plucked at one of the buttons.
Here. What do you suppose this is? Why, it's a hair. Long, black hair. And there are more of them. Almost as though he had been combing a woman's hair when he died.
Look, monsieur. Still more of them. Around his neck.
I knew then that it had been no shadow I had seen at the chateau. I had heard the threatening words. And she had come for the diary. At last.
From the time-worn pages of the past, we have brought you the story, The Rope of Hair. Bellkeeper, toll the bell.
playing my song.
I keep forgetting the words to your song, dude.
Well, you know the words.
Parma, 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 Parma.
I'm sorry, Gar. I didn't quite catch that. What did you say the words to that was?
Parma, 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 Parma.
Yeah, all right. That's enough of that. As we wrap up the rope of armpit hair. Oh, no. Oh, please. Oh, God.
That stinks.
That's the Rapunzel ladder. I am not climbing.
The rope of armpit hair. Rapunzel, Rapunzel, don't shave your pits.
You'll never get out of there. All right, that's one thing to learn.
You'll never get out of there.
That was one thing to learn. Here's another. That's right. Erie House Radio proudly presents yet another Gar's Moral of the Story.
Love and hate both end with the letter E.
You know, it's an interesting question. It's an interesting question that the GC Sci Papers asked is, what was the significance of the diary? Because the ghost woman wanted it, and the guy wanted it that was alive, but the ghost woman ended up with it. But the answer is, it didn't have anything to do with a diary because it was called Rope of Hair. And that's a diary, so I guess that's the answer. I don't know.
We don't know.
It's the diary of Cy Sperling on how to comb hair.
Some things are better left a mystery.
Yes, they are.
Or put another way,
but don't ask me why, 'cause he don't know.
That's right. As we continue our celebration of locks.
Did the Cowstones do anything but that one song?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. They do a Smokey the Bear song, but it's copywritten. We can't do it here.
That and it has Ernest Borgnine, and I don't want to put you through that.
And Ernest Borgnine in a tutu, and
yep.
it's just horrible. So many copyrights. Yes. Before we move too far away from the weird circle. Oh gosh. Oh yeah.
That's all right. We weren't listening to you either.
I got far away from it before I got far away from it. Okay. I've been in quite a few relationships of my own in my days on this planet, but I don't recall ever getting into one where I would sit there and comb some chick's hair. Did you guys comb some chick's hair? Is that some olden time thing or what?
So maybe that's why you got divorced.
I think there was something else going on, but maybe, yeah.
Wow.
We have a list of 49 pages, and she wants an addendum of you won't comb her hair. Yeah, that was it. That last thing.
It's a thing. If you do it very poorly once, they never ask you again. There's my answer.
Yeah. Yeah. Whenever you comb hair, if you ever hear, ow, well, it's time to stop. That you've done as much as you're going to do.
So if you do a bad job combing your hair, she'll give you the brush. Is that what it is?
Oh.
Yeah, she might give you a frying pan. I don't know.
Well, you know, it's funny about the brush. What I used to want to avoid, I pay good money for now. But I digress.
But you digress. Good grief. I digress.
Wow.
Oh.
We got a lot of radio left.
A lot of radio. We probably ought to play some.
Come, boy, go to bed.
Now, Dave, which rendition of The Shadow have we tonight for the Wigmakers of Doom Street?
We do have one with Brett Morrison, who played it longer than anyone else. I do have one little story here. Of course, back then, the radio shows were not really run by the networks, but were run by advertisers and advertising agencies. And what happened to it? Here it is. The one guy that worked for the perhaps the lesson of crime does not pay was driven home the hardest by Robert Smith, who for years made crime pay as the Rothoff and Ryan man in charge of the shadow. Ordered by his doctor to take a vacation from his radio responsibilities, he took the train home to Pennsylvania, where his mother picked him up in the family car. Now, during the drive, Smith noticed it was 5:30 and tuned into the car radio to The Shadow. A horrifying shriek came over the air at that moment, and it so frightened Smith's mother that she drove the car off into the ditch, and Smith spent the rest of his vacation in the hospital, a victim of The Shadow.
I love it. I'm sorry, I find that funny. I probably shouldn't.
I do too. You know, I just these little tidbits from time to time that I come across. But that was out of the old Radio Times from the Radio Researchers Group.
And that's why you should never comb your mom's hair when she's driving.
That's right.
That's right.
Anyway.
I'd go short to say, never comb your mom's hair.
I agree.
Not with a hammer. I'll tell you what, she doesn't like it.
Not with a hammer. You always use a shovel.
That's right. Never hit your grandma with a shovel because it leaves a big impression on her mind.
That's right. Yes. It was like you hit her with a rock, right? Isn't it? Yeah.
All you have to do is periodically go, boo, sooner or later.
Hey, Mom, is it a shovel? It sure is. Anyway.
All right. Let's move on to The Shadow. And it's called The Wig Makers of Doom Street. And it's from...
According to 8 people in New Guinea and in that place that Ray O'Brien 76 is from, November 28th, 1948.
There you go.
Oh no! What evil lurks in the hearts of men? The shadow.
Have you ever thought about what happens within a family overseas that knows only hunger day after day? Parents live in desperate frustration, knowing their children are not receiving proper nourishment and are still unable to provide for them. And the children find it hard to understand why they should not receive the food their bodies crave. This frustration is working today among the millions of hungry families in war-devastated areas. Care food packages going into these homes bring more than just the wholesome food that gives energy and health. They bring cheer and hope. They help families in the important work of reconstruction of their lives and country. Send a care food package today. Send $10 to Nonprofit Care, New York. That's spelled C-A-R-E, Care, 50 Broad Street, New York 4, New York. Again, Care, 50 Broad Street, New York 4, New York. Now, The Shadow. The Shadow, who aids the forces of law and order, is in reality Lamont Cranston, wealthy young man about town. Years ago in the Orient, Cranston learned a strange and mysterious secret, the hypnotic power to cloud men's minds so they cannot see him. Cranston's friend and companion, the lovely Margot Lane, is the only person who knows to whom the voice of the invisible shadow belongs. Today's drama, The Wig Makers of Doom.
Thank you.
It is almost midnight, and in the long deserted theatrical district of the city, the dim lights throw a yellow glow on the dark, wet pavements. Two figures walk along the deserted street. One a thin, gentle old man. The other a girl, young, pretty, but shabbily dressed.
We're almost there. This is our street, my dear.
Dark, isn't it?
Well, not many people live on Doom Street anymore. The old theaters and costume shops closed up years ago. Come along, my dear.
But your wife won't she object to your bringing a total stranger into the house?
Oh, nonsense. Matilda will be delighted. She enjoys doing things for nice girls like you. Come along.
She must be a wonderful woman.
Oh, she is. She is. But you see for yourself. There we are. I'll let her know that we're here.
Come in, Wilbur. Wilbur Jack, Wilbur, haven't you given me such a fright? Who have we here, Wilbur?
This is Frieda, Matilda. The poor girl is a stranger in town. Has no friends. No place to stay.
Why, you poor dear. Come in. Come in. Thank you. Oh, what a nice little room. You must be tired and cold. Wilbur, make Frieda some tea and maybe a little brandy.
Of course, my dear. Of course.
Thanks a lot. I didn't know there were people like you. I've been alone and frightened, I guess.
Well, you're not alone anymore, and you'll never be frightened again. Here, take your hat off. There. Oh, what beautiful blonde hair. And so long.
Thank you. It reaches down to my waist.
Exactly, it is. Nothing like a spot of tea to cheer you up.
Oh, I can use it. Careful now, it's very hot. Good. You do this often? Take girls in like this, honey?
As often as we can, my dear. Wilbur and I have no kin of our own. We like to help out people in trouble.
How nice. I beg your pardon. Just become so...
Well, don't worry your little head about it. Here, lean back. Be comfortable.
Warm. And so long ago, I was warm. And anyone was... And...
Well, Wilson, we better get started.
Perhaps you'd better feel her pulse, just to be sure.
Yes.
Well, Matilda?
She's dead.
Splendid.
That new medicine is really wonderful. So quick and painless. Everything prepared in the basement.
Oh, yes, I made a place for her to rest this morning. I think she'll be very comfortable.
Fine. You take care of the things in the basement and I'll get right to work.
Splendid. I'll be right back, my dear.
Oh, such beautiful hair. Such beautiful long blonde hair. I'm sure it'll be the very nicest wig we ever made.
Not too busy to talk to us, Commissioner?
Busy? Of course I'm busy. I can always find time for you two. What's on your mind, Cranston?
Lamont has another one of his hunches, Commissioner.
Oh, I might have known. What is the best time, Cranston?
Well, I was reading this morning's paper about the disappearance of Frieda Hurley, the little blonde girl from 8th Street.
What's so exciting about that? Happens all the time. Girls come out hoping for a career, don't make the grade, are too stubborn to go home and admit defeat.
Yes, I know, Commissioner, but there's only one of several similar cases during the past month. All blondes, all disappeared, all from the same section of the city.
Could be a coincidence, you know.
And if it weren't coincidence?
Oh, it could be a number of things. Suicide, for instance. Those disappearances aren't necessarily connected.
Well, then you have considered the possibility that they are.
Hang on, man, of course we have.
You think it's suicide, Commissioner?
That's one of the possibilities, Marble. But just the same, we're checking several angles.
Well, in that case, you won't need my help. We'll run along.
Okay, Cranston, come in anytime you two. Glad to see you.
Goodbye, Commissioner.
Goodbye.
Well, Lamont, satisfied?
No, neither is Weston, Margot. There's more behind these disappearances than a series of suicides.
What could it be? Robbery's out of the question. The girls are almost telling.
Police are handicapped in a case like this. They must stick to formal procedures. We don't have to.
What's intended?
Well, I intend to see our old underworld friend, Adolphus Q. Poindexter.
Not that weird little old man.
If there's anything behind these disappearances, I have a feeling that Poindexter will know about it.
Places. I've never seen such a dive. And the characters.
Quiet, darling. You'll hear the proprietor this evening. He thinks he caters to an exclusive clientele.
It's exclusive, all right. Looks like you can't get in unless you've served 20 years or more.
Here's our friend himself. Hello, Mr. Poindexter.
Oh, my very dear friend, Mr. Cranston, and a lovely Miss Lane. Oh, how nice, how very nice.
Hello, Mr. Poindexter.
Well, and what's this? Why, how very thoughtful, my favorite refreshment. Oh, I didn't expect this. No, not at all. refreshing.
I need some help, Mr. Poindexter. Trying to find some connection between a series of girls' disappearances. You've heard about the wave of disappearances lately?
Vaguely. Glasses seem to hold less and less, it seems.
Try mine, it's full.
Why, how charming. Oh, but I wouldn't think of it, but... Oh, but of course you want me to. Well, anything to abide.
The missing girls, Mr. Poindexter?
Girls? Oh, yes, of course. The ones that disappeared.
They're all blondes, according to the paper, and all penniless.
You've met Simon Ferret? No, of course not. Not a very nice person, Simon Ferret, but you should meet him.
You think he's involved in the girls' disappearances?
Oh, couldn't say. Unsavory, completely disreputable fellow. Oh, pardon. Dryness of the throat, you know.
Dry mine. I haven't touched it.
Why, thank you. Girls all disappeared from the same section of the city, correct?
That's right.
Around the deserted theater district?
That's right.
There's no theatrical warehouse near Schumann Alley. Hardly ever used anymore. In the rear of the warehouse is an office. Simon Ferret lives in it. Think you'll find it interesting to talk to him. Very interesting.
All I wanted to know. Thank you, Mr. Poindexter. Come, Margot.
You're quite welcome. Mr. Cranston.
Yeah?
Didn't you forget something?
Hmm? Oh, yes, of course. I'll arrange for another round of, throat moistener on my way out.
Why, it's Mr. Ferret. Come in. Wilford, it's Mr. Ferret. Put on some tea.
Never mind the tea. You were supposed to have something for me tonight. You got it?
Yes, and wait until you see it. It's the most beautiful thing you've ever seen. Wilford, bring me the wig.
You are, my dear.
But... that's another blonde one. I told you I didn't want any more blonde ones.
But isn't it beautiful?
Yeah, it's terrific. But from now on, I got to be redheads or brunettes. I got all kinds of outlets, see? Costumers, hairdressers. They think your stuff's okay, best they've ever seen, but you got to mix up the colors.
Yes, but I...
Well,
All right, Matilda.
$200. That's an awful lot to pay for a wig.
But you make a little profit, too, don't you, Mr. Ferris?
I do all right. Now, remember, no more blondes.
We'll remember. Won't we, Wilford?
Now, look, Gramps. Just get me the kind of merchandise I want. Maybe I'll drop a few hints about you, too.
Hints? Drop a few hints to whom?
Well, the police, maybe.
What?
Now, Wilford, Mr. Ferret is right. From now on, we'll make a special effort to get what you want.
I thought you'd see it my way. I'll be back tomorrow night. I'd hate to see you go back on your word. Bye now.
What an unpleasant man. Why, I should have insisted that he leave when he adopted that tone with us, Matilda.
Now, Wilford, we must control our temper.
Threatening us with the police. Why, that's ridiculous.
Wilford, when you're in Palmhurst, you must deal with all kinds. Now, I think you'd better leave on your next assignment.
But, Matilda, now,
and
I...
don't forget, Wilford. Brunette.
Mother, you sure didn't have your costume in this old warehouse?
That's the only way we can meet our friend Ferret, Margot, and I'm very anxious to make his acquaintance.
That would be a door. Where's the light on?
Probably.
Sheriff, I...
What do you want? Who are you?
My name is Mount Cranston. My friend's name.
What do you want here?
You sound nervous, Mr. Ferret. You needn't be. We're not the police.
Police? Why should I be afraid of the police?
It's a little odd to be operating a legitimate business in this part of town, isn't it, Mr. Ferret?
So the rent's cheaper here, so what's it to you? Besides, this is a good location for what I sell.
What kind of merchandise do you deal in, Mr. Ferret?
I don't know what you want, but you're in the wrong place. Now, you better get out fast.
If I were you, I'd be a little more cooperative. District Attorney might like to know about some of your enterprises.
You're fishing, mister. You're bait showing. I'm a legitimate operator.
Yeah? Well, what's your interest in the three girls that have disappeared in the past few weeks? Three blonde girls.
Three blonde?
What about it, Ferret?
I don't know what you're talking about.
But you do have some connection with them.
Now, look, mister, you better get going.
I'm not
going right now.
Come on,
now.
Set a gun.
And I got a permit to use it. How do you act, Martin Blow, or do I have to...
Okay, Ferret. Got a point there. We'll go.
And don't come back.
We'll be seeing you, Ferret. Come on.
You say we didn't have any
good. But we did, Margot. We accomplished exactly what we set out to do.
We did? How?
The minute I mentioned the missing blondes, Ferret did.
So?
So, he must be either tied up with their disappearance, or he's working for someone who is. And I think we scared him enough to send him running to the real head. All we have to do is follow.
Okay, okay. You told me there was a place I could sleep tonight. Where is it?
My wife's and my home is right down in this next corner, my dear. Down this block.
What kind of a deal is this, anyway?
I told you, my dear. My wife, Matilda, runs a little refuge for girls who've been, well, unfortunate.
Yeah, that's me, all right. I had nothing but tough luck since I hit this town.
Of course, my dear. Now, come on. Come on, this way.
Hey! Let go of my arm. Who are you pulling?
I beg your pardon. I just don't have to keep my dear wife waiting.
I don't get it. Why should you and your wife care about me or my kind? What?
Nothing, my dear. Here we are. Shall we go in?
I changed my mind.
But you mustn't, my dear. Now, you must come.
Get
in.
Your hands off me. Let go of me,
please,
I
please, my dear. Now, don't raise your
let
voice.
Let me go or I'll raise the rope.
Don't raise
get
your voice.
Get your hands off me.
Quiet, you. So loud. Why just... What's the matter? She must have said it, right?
Rupert, what is it?
She struggled, Matilda. No, I didn't want her to be heard, and I was just trying to keep her from screaming.
Wilford, how unkind of you. I've told you so often you must be gentle with these girls. Now look what you've done. This one is dead.
Return to the shadow in just a minute.
This one is dead. How cumbersome. How inconvenient.
And the trash doesn't come until next Tuesday.
Yes.
Yes. Now we have to drag her down the steps.
Yep. Bounce, 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 bounce. Yeah. That's the fun part.
That is, yeah.
Of dragging bodies, you know, when their heads bounce on the stairs. It's kind of
Yeah. Yeah. I always thought so.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's the slapstick that you get to only, you know, laugh at privately, but still fun, you know.
I love that reference to an adult beverage in the story when they called it a throat moistener.
Oh, yes, a throat moisturizer.
I'm needing some more of the throat moisturizer over here.
You know, yeah.
Could be.
Well, I always advocate for a quality beverage on the horrible horror, you know, because that you got to have something going on there.
Yep.
It's Friday.
And it's three-day weekend for some of us, and I hope you guys are going to enjoy your Memorial Day weekend. Thanks for sharing part of it with us. Yeah, I mean you, Fogsbane, and Linda Liu, and GGSI Paper, and Becca. How you doing? Thanks for joining us.
I didn't know we were coming apart.
I'm surprised we're still broadcasting. We had some heavy winds here in Ohio, gang. Let me tell you.
Yeah, I was driving through Akron, and it seemed like half the blocks were had power out, and the other half didn't. And so it was weird because you're supposed to treat let me tell you, folks, when your electric goes out, you're supposed to treat every stop like a four-way stop. You know, that doesn't always work that way, but you're supposed to.
Yeah, that's right. It was so windy. I live out in the country, right? And I kept hearing this music. It's weird.
You hear that
window.
Music?
Look out for the bicycle.
Well, that reminds me that one time I was in a car with this guy, and I wasn't driving. He was. And, you know, I said, could you give me a lift across there? He said, sure, no problem. And so, you know, I get in the car and take off. And we're going, you know, and all of a sudden, you know, there's a stoplight up ahead and it turns red. And he, like, goes right through it. And I was like, that was a red light. He's like, don't worry about it. My brother taught me how to drive. And I was like, okay. And I'm sitting back, you know, and we come up to another intersection. Red light goes right through it. And I'm like, man, that was a red light. You know, just said, don't worry about it. My brother taught me how to drive. So we're cruising on down, and all of a sudden there's a green light, and he slams on the brake. We fishtail all over the place. I was like, it's a green light. And he goes, yeah, my brother might be coming.
Hey,
I can't believe you remembered that one, Gar. Congratulations.
I don't either. Yeah.
He had a hat. That's all I know.
He had a hat. That's
you
right.
Did. He had a hat. Yeah.
Go back to show number 115.
Okay.
I think it is. No, I don't know.
I told that joke.
We're on our 507th show tomorrow. Or today.
And
today.
I only know six jokes, so there you go.
Yeah, God. Be another long 500 coming. Let me tell you.
Oh, yeah. Oh. Moisturizer.
Let's wrap up the shadow, and maybe we can squeak in another little feature for you from Old Time Radio Land as we conclude. The Wig Makers of Doom Street. And those creepy people.
Nowadays, no one questions the fact that public education is one of the cornerstones, perhaps the cornerstone, of a successful democracy. Unfortunately, it's also the cornerstone of a successful dictatorship. As far back as 1647, before there even was the United States of America, the Massachusetts colony began establishing a public education system. But only 50 years later, over in France, Louis XIV, one of the greatest despots of all time, signed an ordinance requiring regular attendance at school. Our own Thomas Jefferson placed his hope for democracy in a growing education. But Hitler, too, knew there was no possible future for Nazi rule without compulsory education. Which is just a reminder that the word education can mean all things and anything, can lead to free thought or captive thought, and whether you're a parent of school children or not, it's up to you as an American citizen to keep our system of public education democratic and strong. The schools belong to you and me. Let's be sure they're good. And now, back to the shadow. Lamont Cranston and Margot Lane are investigating a series of strange disappearances. In each case, the girl has been blonde, penniless, and friendless. Suddenly, there's a strange break in the pattern, and Lamont and Margot go to police headquarters and Commissioner Weston.
Well, I see you've read of the newer disappearances in that same district, Cranston.
Another girl, Commissioner. Only this time a brunette.
Exactly. Breaks the pattern, doesn't it?
You still think there's suicide, Commissioner?
I guess not, Margot. Too many coincidences involved.
What do you plan to do, Commissioner?
I'm thinking of throwing a cordon of men around the district. They'll filter in. There'll be no publicity or fanfare. That way we won't scare off the real operators if there are.
Commissioner, I have a favor to ask. Give me a couple of hours on this case before you move in.
What do you know about this, Grant?
Nothing, but I do suspect a lot.
If I'm right, I think we can crack this racket tonight.
Well, it can't hurt. Try. Our plan doesn't go into effect till midnight.
That's all the time I need, Jason.
Mom, how can you be so sure that Ferret will contact the real brains behind the racket tonight?
What else can he do, Margot? If you've thrown a scare into him, you'll have to report it to the others.
Suppose he's phoned.
I don't think so, Margot. I think the shadow's there he is.
Head him upstairs.
Put him in. Let him stop. Let me follow.
Turn the corner.
Come on. This is not down this alley.
I've never noticed this before. What's the name
of it? Oh. Doom. We're in luck,
Margot.
Oh. It's a dead end. Ferret will have to come this way when he leaves. When he does, we'll be here to meet him.
What happened? You look okay.
Where's Wilkins?
Why, I didn't expect you to
worry. What about the wig? I got one for you. A nice brunette wig. Oh, it's beautiful, isn't it, Mr. Ferret?
I need two.
Be patient, my dear Mr. Ferret. Wilford must have time.
We haven't got time. I just got an order for another brunette job. I'm going to fill it, and then I'm getting out.
Getting out?
I'm going back to shoveling hot cars or something. This racket's getting too cozy.
Cozy? What do you mean?
The cops, private eyes, somebody's wise. I need another wig, Wilford. How long will it take?
Next week?
Now, look, we haven't got that much time. I want that wig tomorrow.
I never saw you so excited, Mr. Fenn.
Oh, I don't know how I ever got mixed up with a couple of nuts like you. Now, look, there's a private eye called Lamont Cranston on my tail. He and a gal named Lane were at my office. He's got a line on those missing dames.
But I...
Now, Wilford, this is no time to argue. Mr. Ferret gives us such good prices for our wigs, and he needs one more.
I can't do it. Not by tomorrow, monsieur.
I'm getting that wig tomorrow. The police are getting tipped off to you, both of you. I'll be back. You better have the merchandise waiting for me.
I don't think Ferret will be very long, Margot. He seems...
You don't even suspect me to follow.
It's terrible, all right. Back into the shadows.
I'm going to see you. Stop him.
They're making a break for it. I'll handle him, Margot.
What about me?
Get a cab, go straight home. I'll call you as soon as I can.
Ferret, he's getting away.
He won't, Margot. I think the shadow can outrun our friend.
Better start walking. That's the third cab with a fare in the last 10 minutes.
Goodness,
oh,
miss.
Oh, you startled me.
Are you Miss Lane, Mr. Cranston, then?
Yes, I'm Margot Lane.
Thank heavens. Mr. Cranston asked me to find you. I'm Wilfred Chatfield. My wife and I are old friends of Mr. Cranston.
Lamont wanted me?
He just phoned. He wanted you to wait at my home, right down here.
Where is Lamont?
He said he was very busy. He called just a second ago and asked me to look for
him. I don't understand.
Mr. Cranston couldn't wait to explain. He merely said to tell you that it would not be safe for you to go home now.
I see. Well, all right. Where is your house?
Just a few steps more. There we are, Miss Lane.
Wilford, back to you?
Yes, Matilda. I had wonderful luck. I found Mr. Cranston's friend, Miss Lane.
Oh, my dear, come in.
Thank you, Mrs. Chapman.
What a nice little room. I'm so glad you like it. Oh, Wilford, what will Miss Lane think, letting her stand here, off too? Bring some tea and a spot of brandy.
Right away, my dear.
Sit here, Miss Lane. Sir, let me take your hat. There. Oh, my, what beautiful hair. And brunette.
Thank you. Did Lamont say when he'd be here?
Right away, my dear. It won't be long.
Nothing like a steaming pot of tea. That'll chase the chills out of your bones.
Thank you, Wilford. I'll pour for Miss Lane. Now, there you are, my dear. That'll do the trick.
Mm. Thank you. Nice and warm, just like the room. Wonderful.
Lucky for us there were no taxis, hey, Miss Lane?
Lucky for me. Oh, I beg your pardon. I don't know why I should be so sleepy. You must have had a trying day.
Oh.
I know it's unforgivable, but how to keep my eyes open.
Well, close your eyes, my dear.
Oh.
That's it. Relax.
Oh. Choke on, Lamont. Come find me.
Sleep. We must hurry, Wilford.
Get things ready in the basement.
We don't have the time. I'll do it here.
But Matilda...
I'll do it here, Wilford.
Oh.
She isn't dead.
It doesn't matter. We haven't time to wait.
Well, that wouldn't be right, Matilda. We've never done it while they were still alive.
The rest were different. Don't you see, Wilford? This one is a spy from the police.
But we can't do it to her yet. She's not dead.
I can do it, and I will.
No, Matilda, no. Who's that?
Don't answer it, Wilford.
Matilda.
Don't answer it.
Somebody's coming in.
Who is it?
Who's laughing?
Who is it? What do you want?
Wait. That's all I want, just wigs. Four beautifully coiffed wigs. Three blonde and one brunette.
We have no wigs here.
No, Matilda.
I not only want the wigs, but I want their original owners.
Owners? But they're resting in the basement. Why, they're...
Stop that, can't you see he's tricking you?
The dead never rest, Wilford. Listen.
Matilda, I hear them. I hear them coming.
Wilford, be quiet.
Can't you hear them coming, Matilda?
Yes. Listen, Matilda. The girls, you hear them? They didn't rest. You said that they would. You said they would.
Be quiet, you crazy fool.
Wilford knows the dead never rest, Matilda.
The girls are just outside the door, Matilda. They'll be coming in.
No! Oh, it can't be! It can't be!
But it is, Matilda. They're here to claim you both right now.
Open up to the end of the law.
Well, I don't mind admitting you gave me a real fright on this case, Margaret.
I gave myself one, too.
When I came in that room and saw you out there in that chair, I thought I was too late.
The most reassuring feeling in the world was when I felt your fingertips on my pulse.
Well, I had to be sure you were all right. The minute I was convinced you were only doped, ready to go to work on them. How did you manage?
I suspected the little old man wasn't what he pretended to be. So when they offered me tea, I managed to spill most of it. I did have to drink some, enough to knock me out.
Thank heavens you had the foresight.
But how did you manage to get back so fast?
When I caught Simon Ferret, I got the truth out of him. I called Weston and headed for the Chatfields.
I'm certainly glad that case is over.
Yes, so am I, Margot. Well, I think we'd better stop somewhere and get something to pick you up a little.
Fine. I'd love it. Anything but a cup of hot tea.
At least a dozen times a day, you and I ask the same question of everyone we meet. The question, how are you? Yet, we never seem to find time to wait for the answer. Maybe we're afraid to wait because we know it won't be too encouraging. In fact, with some 7.5 million of our neighbors suffering from the greatest grippers of all time, arthritis and rheumatism, it can't be. True, they suffer in silence because science, as yet, has not discovered any specific cure. They are helpless and will remain so unless you and I and everyone within the sound of my voice does something to help those who cannot help themselves. So send your contribution to Arthritis, Box 1-200, General Post Office, New York 1, New York. That's Arthritis, Box 1-200, General Post Office, New York 1, New York.
This story is copyrighted by Street & Smith Publications, Incorporated. All names and places are fictitious. Any similarity to persons living or dead is purely coincidental. Listen again next week, same time, same station, when the Shadow will again demonstrate that
the weed of crime bears bitter fruit.
Jesus.
Crime does not pay.
Shadow Power.
Next week, same time, same station, we bring you another strange and thrilling adventure in the Shadow's daring battle against the forces of evil. The part of Lamont Cranston was played by Brett Morris and Margot by Grace Matthews. The program came to you from New York. Suppose you're driving along peacefully and suddenly one of those extra loud horns is blasted at you by an impatient driver who's in a hurry to get you round you or make you hustle up. Well, don't let them rattle you. Let them blow their horn. Let them pass you. Let him have the right of way if need be. Let him live and keep yourself by. This is the Zombie Broadcasting System.
Ah, yes, the Shadow knows. He knows a lot.
He does. He knows lots and lots and lots. Probably not as much as Gar knows, though.
No. Gar knows things. That's why Erie House Radio proudly presents yet another Gar's Moral of the Story.
I can only imagine the problem of being a poisoner isn't running out of poison as much as it is running out of victims.
Now there's a guy.
Run out of victims.
There's a guy with some tresses, man. Johnny Weissmuller.
My hair is a fright.
Weissmuller didn't really have that long a hair. Some of the other Tarzans had longer hair than he.
True. He was more clean cut than your average Tarzan.
He was a seriously clean cut Tarzan. Yeah.
And you know, there's a difference in the way people pronounce it, Tarzan or Tarzan. Some say Tarzan. Yes.
Tarzan. Well, it goes. I always remember like it's Tarzan the Monkey Man. So, you know, there you go.
There you go.
That only happens if you're Ray Stevens and it's Get Tarzan, man.
Then
he's Tarzan, Monkey Man. Yes. Yeah. Well.
Man with the plan. You know, we're gonna dig up while we got some time left. But before we do, I want to remind you we're continuing our swarthy story tomorrow night with CBS Radio Mystery Theater, The Red-Headed League. That's a Sherlock Holmes story there for you. As we lose a bit of hair tomorrow night at 6:30 Eastern.
And we'll even have some. We even have, to go with it, tomorrow night, some hair facts, Dave facts. Be sure to tune in for those.
Oh, we love Dave facts. That's good stuff.
I don't want to steal the Dave facts thunder, but I remember this. I remember this is a weird little hair fact thing. Was back in, I think it was 1968, arch criminal Charles Manson was caught because he was hiding underneath the sink, and he closed the doors on this thing, and his hair was sticking out, and a cop said, that's true. That's a true thing. I'm not kidding. And so, so they caught him by the hair. His hair was sticking out.
I'm Harry Noonan, 99.
And even under the sink.
Even under the sink. He was hiding under the kitchen sink, and they had some clothes. You closed the doors, and his hair was sticking out.
Yeah, let's not even talk about full moons. No.
That's a mighty hairy sink over there, Lieutenant. What do you think?
I think we got just enough time for a quick little song here. In fact, I'm going to be so cheesy, I'm not even going to slip a dime into the jukebox. I'm just going to bump it like the Fonz. And we're going to get a song right now.
fella tulip in your hair. Upon my coat you pinned a rose so rare. Time has not changed your loveliness, you're just as sweet to me. I love you, yet I can't forget the days that used to be. When you wore a tulip, a sweet yellow tulip, and I wore a big red rose. When you caressed me, well then heaven bless me, what a blessing no one knows. You made life cheery when you called me dearie, was down where the blue grass grows. Your lips were sweeter than tulip when you wore a tulip, and I wore a big red rose.
Shots with When You Wore a Tulip. Hey, you can catch, if you're in Brunstucky and get Bat TV, that's their cable system out there, I guess, you can see the Weirdness Really Bad Movie with Dave Binkley and I. And I, our tribute to Superman, but real quick, I want to just say how proud I am to work with these two guys. First, Dave, who recently got nominated for a potential induction into the Horror Host Hall of Fame.
Yay!
We'll hopefully get you details of how you can vote for Dave, because you have no one else you can vote
for.
We command it. and I'm equally as proud to work with Gar, who does his horrible horror starring Gar the Ghoul, oddly enough. And that'll be right after our show tomorrow at 6:30. It ends at 8. Then get on over to Twitch, right, Gar?
Yeah, Twitch dot whatever Dave said.
Twitch TV. TwitchTV.com. How's that?
TwitchTV.com. Look for Gar.
We got your back, buddy.
Yay!
So who's holding my front? Okay.
That ain't my job. My job
that
is
ain't my job either. But I hope someone does it quick. I'm gonna fall over. Yeah.
And in
I'm just going to say real quick here, if you don't have Bat TV, then you could go to the Erie House page, and there's a link on there where you can watch it from Bat TV's video on demand, the Superman from Cleveland, the Krypton.
Oh yeah, show. Put that on the Erie House page, Dave.
It should be there. I'll check it out.
Go to Facebook, check it all out.
It's funny. I have the disc of this, right, of this show.
Yes.
But I'd rather watch it on the internet. Is that weird or what? Am I weird?
Yes, you're weird.
Yeah. Thank you. I feel better now.
Okay. Okay. Glad to help.
Then it was all worthwhile.
Yes, you're weird.
Load off my mind. Well, our timer's off. Good night.
The castle lights are growing dim. There's no one left but me and him. When next we meet in Frankenstone, don't come alone.
So, all right.
Wow, that was off.
Well, mine said 28 seconds when the lady goes, "You got 10 seconds, bitch." And I'm like, what?
What?
Well, I don't think she said 10
Call
seconds,
bitch.
But bitch,
what?
But that's the way I heard it. So.
Yeah,
Call me
yeah.
a bitch. The devil, you say.
I thought I had all the time in the world.
Yep. It is, Dale. It is on the Erie House page, along with the link at the top there. I put a message with a link to the VBIT.com where they can watch Superman from Cleveland to Krypton.
Ooh, I'm going to copy that link and put it on my Spook Show page.
There you go.
There you go.
All the pages. And, Dave, whenever you figure out how to get us to vote for you for the World Series Hall of Fame best
Okay.
Shoe shiner ever. You tell us what to do, and we'll do it.
The Shoe Shine Hall of Fame, I'll let you know there. So as soon as
Shoe Shine Hall of Fame. Oh my
I forget,
God.
You know, but you tell us how we'll do it.
Is there a moss gathering Hall of Fame? I might have a shot at that one.
Moss gathering? You've been gathering moss again?
Yes.
We talked you out of doing that. You're still doing that?
Yeah, I did. I thought so, too.
We need an intervention, I think, because that's just...
Yeah, you probably do, because I need to do it. I haven't done a video hosting in like, forever.
Yeah, you need to get back on the horsey there, buddy.
I know.
Yep,
I'm pretty sure my friends at the Vortex would throw it out there, you know.
Sure they would.
I'm just getting worse and worse as I go at self-promotion, you know?
Well, you got it. Dude, get on there, man. Do it. Do what you do.
I mentioned it to a few people I know here and there. That was nice. New listener tonight. A workmate.
Yes.
Who? Rao Brian 76?
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
That was a workmate of mine.
Oh. Well, I hope they enjoyed it.
They stuck around. They got roped in. So,
yeah.
Hey.
they kept responding to the Ernest Borgnine jokes. So.
Yes. He's become a house favorite. All because of you, Gar.
Yeah.
If only there was some Ernest Borgnine radio, we could do a night of it. A tribute to Ernest Borgnine.
Supposedly there's actually an album he did. Like a singing album, like William Shatner or something. There's actually Ernest Borgnine.
if it exists, Dave can find it.
Now you got me curious. You got me curious here.
Wouldn't that be funny if I know you can't commit to Saturdays because you're prepping for your show and everything. But it would be so much fun to do a talk show like we did in the past, Dave, where we did a whole show. It was hard, Gar, to keep talking and being engaging with nothing really to fall back, or very little to fall back on, other than the topic at hand, and to stay on topic. You know, it was fun, wasn't it, Dave?
Yes. Sometimes it was truly a struggle. Sometimes, yeah.
Yeah. But we kept each other going.
But other times we actually ran out of time, you know, like we did with, like we had with the, the Night Stalker program. That was really.
Oh, yeah.
That was a fun show.
Yeah, but I think we stuck a radio program in there, though, didn't we?
No, we were going to, but we accidentally put it for the wrong amount of time.
Oh, yeah.
And, yeah. So we didn't get that in there.
Oh, yeah.
So next time we bring them back, we make sure we have that time because I have that 1954 Rod Serling written and produced radio program.
Yes.
It happens to you.
Mr. Dowidziak's coming back for that, right?
Yeah, I got to get him back for that, yep.
And Gar,
I'm a lover of Night Stalker. I'd have to have notes in front of me to keep it going.
Oh no, you don't need notes because that guy knows everything about Night Stalker.
Yeah.
I would have nothing. I would be like,
you'd be taking notes, brother. You'd be
okay.
Taking notes.
No, there's some things in my head that I would want to kick out there, but I would need notes just to stay up.
And Gar, we may be getting Mr. Bradley Beard to visit us.
Yeah, you said.
Yeah, he reached out to me, so I think it's on soon. And we'll scheme something around that too for a Saturday night.
Mm-hmm.
Because we got to keep the old time of radio flowing.
Oh, this is artwork related, sort of, is I'm doing a, what am I doing?
I have no idea.
It's right. I don't need that again, rundown sheet. Okay, so I'm starting. No, it's not here. I'm starting from 19, I think it's 48, but I could be wrong. The G-Men versus the Black Dragon cliffhanger.
Oh, the serial.
Yeah. And so what I'm going to do is I did this with the Crimson Ghost about two to five years ago. I don't remember when. Is because I'm autistic, I made Gar the Ghoul and Crimson Ghost postcards, a set of five or four, I forget, or six. And
I think it was five. It was five.
And what I did I just said, okay, you send me a postcard or a letter, and here's my address. You send me that with a reverse, you know, an address on there I can read, and I will send you the postcard back. And I got a lot of response out of that. So coming up for the G-Men versus the Black Dragon, I'm going to come up with a new postcard set and do that. It's like four or five weeks worth of.
See, maybe Vorpal Byte will have some more suggestions for how you should do that again.
No.
He's a dwarf.
You never know.
I almost said a bad word.
What's funny is he did it. The car just stopped the show. He read his comment. Said, you know what? You can always get your own show and do it the way you want. This is how I'm doing it.
Yeah, you could. I had to pull it over to the side.
Gar is such a good guy on his show and how he treats everybody. But, man, he saw that. It just really kind of ticked him off. So this is my show that I'm doing.
I hate when people troll like that because you hit the nail on the head. This is the Gar show. Yeah. This is not the Vorpal Byte show.
That's right.
Mm-hmm. You know?
And then he disappeared for a long time. He disappeared for a long time.
You may have humbled him. Good work. He's a good
I'm just here to provide an entertainment and everybody can have fun and, you know, have some silly times. But you take it out back, you know, so we can bet on it. But, you know.
Yeah. Okay, good.
You know, I'm not against a little capital gain here, you know.
You're in the wrong business. You're in the wrong business then, buddy.
Yeah, hosting should not know.
It depends. If you go look at some host, man, they've got all kinds of – there's a word for it. The young kids have a word for it, for stuff that you buy that has their name on it. Swaggle.
Merch.
Swaggle Buffo something. Merkel Doddle something.
Swag.
Yeah. All that. I don't know. Yeah. We call it hoofing. You're hoofing stuff. That's what you're doing. You're trying to get people to buy your stuff because you put something on it. I don't know. But so next year I'm going to be selling Gar the Ghoul shoehorns, and think everybody will buy some. And
I like that. Have Gar shoehorn idea as a winner.
Yeah,
I would stand in line for that. Yes, I would.
Wouldn't you? Well, the Gar shoes took off. I figure a shoehorn.
You know how hard it is to find a good shoehorn these days?
I tell you.
Do you really want your likeness? Do you really want your likeness by people's smelly feet?
Always. Where else would you put it? Ernest Borgnine Foot Locker? I don't know.
There's another, potential for.
By the way, I have some bad news. In searching for Ernest Borgnine on the radio, I got one list that off of the Ethel Merman page that he was her fourth and last husband. That's the only mention that Ernest Borgnine has in radio.
Wow.
I thought you were going to tell us, he's dead. And I'd go like, yeah, well, you know.
We kind of figured.
You got to die sometime. You know?
Yeah. 95% of the people that we play, of these shows that we play, are dead. So,
I know.
That's not a big deal. That's not a big deal.
I just got a
record, I can explain my whereabouts for each and every one of them.
I can verify. I'm an opposite of that. I can't explain my whereabouts ever because I don't know where I've been. So, yeah. So come at me, big man.
Interesting.
With a badge. Come get me. You know, hey. You know, four hots and a bed. Okay, sure. You know,
four hots and a cot.
Well, you know, it used to be four hots and a cot. Now it's four hots, a cot, and a guy named Louie that wants to be your wife. And it's like, no.
Well,
no, yeah.
And or a college education if you're in there long enough.
yeah, that's true. You know, or start your own evangelical organization. You'll make millions.
I don't know if the idea of educating criminals is a good idea. would it not stand the risk of making them better criminals?
I don't know, at
least they're better criminals, you know.
I like the educational line they've got where they offer. They offer criminals, you know, a line in becoming a locksmith. I'm like, there you go.
Yeah.
Sure.
That one.
Sure.
I don't see how. Where's the possible drawback in that?
What
now, come
could
on.
Happen?
What
could
happen?
Happen?
What could happen? God.
You know. Yes. Yes.
Your dollars at work.
No, or they turn them into lawyers. I think that's another thing.
I think that's a requirement for the bar exam, isn't it? You got to have at least so many convictions.
At least 28 days in the pokey.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, God. I just thought of something terrible I better not say. It's funny, but I better not.
I don't know what it is. I bring it out in you guys. You go blue every time I open my mouth.
There's something about Gar. I don't know. He makes us crazy.
He's a bad influence.
I am.
Yes.
Dale, what would make us do something like that? Cue the song.
Hey, Dale, cue the song. Yeah.
Don't ask me why, 'cause he don't know.
There you go.
It was a what question, though. See, it wasn't a why question. That's why I want to use that as my excuse for not being prepared.
There was a part in the show where I wanted you to cue it up, but I couldn't remember the question. I was going, Dave, what's the question? What do you ask? I couldn't remember. I was like, Dave, what did we ask him to get him to play that song?
How do we get him to shoot up?
What do we do? How do we go? Yeah, it was. We have a lot of fun on here, I tell you.
Oh, more than humans should be allowed.
Uh-huh. My brother might be coming. Oh, boy.
And he had a hat.
And he had a hat. I love the hat a hat. So
yeah,
I told the hat a hat joke, and then someone told me you can't tell a Jewish joke like that. And I was like, my last name's Gernstein. What the heck is wrong with telling a joke like that? That's a great joke. That's the most hilarious. You know, it's like, take my wife, please, or whatever. It's a great joke. Come on.
It's a fine joke.
It's a great joke. He had a hat. It's my favorite joke. Well, one of them.
It's up there.
Oh, it's up there. Yeah.
Yeah.
In
the annals of Gar comedy, it's up there.
Yeah, that's up there. And I don't even remember. I don't even remember who I heard it from. Who told that joke?
Jackie Mason. I don't know.
Was it Jackie Mason? Maybe it was. It sounds
no,
Jackie Mason could have told it really well. I can hear it in my head that he, yeah.
I pulled that out of my hat.
Your hat.
Yes.
Okay. Yeah.
Yes, my hat.
No, it could have been. It could have been Jackie. Yeah, him, or yeah.
If it was, I'll be amazed because I just made that up. I kid you not. I just.
I don't know, but Yeah, well, after you said that, I all of a sudden heard Jackie Mason tell it, and I was like, could have been Jackie Mason. Yeah, very well. Could have been.
Merely the power of suggestion.
You know, Mel Brooks could have told it, but I don't think Mel Brooks told it. But it would have been funny if he did.
Oh, my. Anything he does is funny.
Well, Henny Youngman could have said it, but I don't think he did. Because it's an absolutely clean joke.
Yes.
Absolutely clean. Hilarious.
But funny anyway.
But funny anyway. Yeah, you know.
Yes.
wow. So, yeah, Dave was telling me all about the hair thing where he was like, I bet I can find, you know, X number of shows got hair in them. And
yeah.
Bigger than anything if you didn't find hair-related stories.
And
here
we hair in the
know.
Drain. Ew, ew.
Ew. No. Actually, Dave, you could have mixed it up and had a bunny rabbit story in there, too, because they're called hairs. You know.
You could have.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
You could have. Except
you
I don't
could've.
Know any bunny rabbits. Radio programs.
Don't challenge them. Don't challenge them. Will, again, if it exists.
Bunny rabbits.
Bunny rabbits.
Bunny
rabbits.
Bunny rabbits.
Wait a second. We just heard some bunny rabbit. We heard a bunny rabbit story about a guy who went into his house and there was a bunny rabbit in the corner. And he was like, oh my gosh, there's a bunny rabbit in the corner. And Mel Blanc was in there and he was dressed up like Bugs Bunny. And we just
we do that for Easter. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So bunny rabbits all over the place in that one. At least three, because one of them was the real Easter bunny. I think.
I remember what you're talking about.
Yeah, finally
the real guy showed up.
Yeah, and he was like,
yeah.
You guys are hacks. Get out of here. He had a hack.
You're a hack, bunny. Get out of my face.
You're a hack, bunny. Get out of here.
Yeah.
Stop trying to elbow into my shtick here, bunny rabbit. good old bunny rabbit. And then, Dale, I know you saw the pictures of Dave, and I talked to Dave. Dave went and saw the B9 robot.
I know.
Bring the mini-me bunny B9.
Well, I didn't forget.
Been.
I didn't know it was there. I went
Yeah, you had no idea you were going to get
exposed
to that.
Dale, that's down in Medina at the Alien Vacation Mini Golf. And
I have to go there now.
I was well overdue taking them a DVD from last year. So I finally had a few minutes to go to Medina and took it and dropped it off. Now, Mark Claus was not there, nor was Dana, but the guy that was there that let us in and let us film last year, he was there. And as soon as he figured out who I was, oh, yeah, come here. You're going to love this. And Billy Mooney had actually signed a robot that was on the back.
Oh, no, I'm kidding. Oh, man.
Yeah.
They also have other.
Go ahead.
Go ahead.
Now,
I was
going to
say there's other.
Oh, go ahead.
I was going to say there's other sci-fi movie paraphernalia there. They now have set up the Slee Stack, a full-size Slee Stack. It was an outfit from the movie of Land of the Lost. And they have like three artifacts from the Men in Black movies. And they have a bunch of like, art on display yet, but they're getting there.
Oh.
And it's mini golf, but it's also, the way it's lit up, it's also in 3D. And it's really wild going through there.
Oh, man. I'm even more jealous than I was when I first saw the picture, man. I'm really... really jealous yet happy for you at the same time. It had to be a thrill.
And I was going to enthusiastically interject, how many times during your life or during your day are you going through your day? It's like, hey, is that the B9 robot from Lost? Oh, my gosh. Signed by Bill Mooney?
Yep.
You know, that was
crazy. Yep. Yeah, yeah. Next time I go there, I'm definitely taking my B9 and getting an updated picture.
Yeah.
There you go.
Oh, I should have sent the B9s to Bill Mumy, got him signed, and then sent them to you. You guys would have wet your pants.
I have a hard enough time doing that already, and it doesn't have anything to do with
that's
it.
True too.
Get excited.
So next time we'll get that done, and I'll send Dave some Depends too.
Oh, no, I would have soiled myself as well. I would have soiled myself as well.
Send Depends for all my friends. There you go. All the way.
Another round of Depends, please.
Yeah, sure. Why not?
Real friends? It depends. Oh, God.
Yes. Only my friends get Depends. which is like really... Oh, now I'm thinking like George Carlin, you know. He talked about adult diapers. That was bad.
Yep. That's my old George. He's one of my heroes. He went places others dare not go.
Yes.
Before things got crazy. Now it's like...
Even before he took a turn towards even darker commentary on society, I felt in the entire time I understood this person... George and all of his ramblings on vinyl and CDs and whatever, that he was the modern day Mark Twain for commentary on what was going on.
I think so. I think, you know what, that's a hell of an observation by you, Gar, because
I take it back.
I can see that analogy of a Twainism there real strong.
Yeah, well, Twain did Letters from Earth, and he did some other commentary in books. And some of the stuff was printed after he died because they didn't want to make the family suffer too much. So Twain got it printed after. But a lot of the stuff that Twain wrote was biting commentary about what's going on, you know. And I saw that same level of mentality reflected in Carlin's word choice and his direction that he was trying. It was just, I don't know. I was just always amazed
Here's what happened with that, Gar. George Carlin was awarded the Mark Twain Prize for American Humor just a few days before his death. 4 months later, some of America's foremost comedians gathered to speak about his influence on them and present the award to his family. So there you go.
Yeah. Yeah.
He would have thought of it when he was alive. He had an odd view of things, you know, and I don't know.
He did.
No, I thought that when he was alive. I thought that when he was alive during in the 70s when he was kicking all the stuff, but then he took kind of a dark, sarcastic turn towards social commentary in the 90s, I guess. But I still felt like he was definitely a modern day Mark Twain in his view, because Mark Twain had that same kind of view, a very educated mentality towards commentary on what was going on with society at large.
Well, even if not educated, enlightened, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Well, you have to have it was amazing to have that perspective. You know, and both of those guys had a very common perspective of what was going on in their times. And, you know, I mean, I enjoyed the silly stuff Carlin did in the 70s, in the 60s, 70s, into the 80s. And then he turned into a more focused, finer point to his commentary.
You know what I think is overlooked in a lot of his work was that one show he did on Fox for one season, and I don't know why it didn't get picked up, where he played that kind of a pessimistic a cab driver, but at the end he always did something nice for somebody at the end of the show. I don't understand why that show didn't get picked up, because it was a very well-done show.
That's probably why.
Yeah. He was just a cutting edge guy. I've got both of his two or three of his books that he wrote. Always fun to crack those open and look at them. But I've also got Twain sitting there, you know, lots of fun.
Yeah, he hasn't written anything lately, though.
No, he hasn't.
Not that I know about. Not that I know about. But also another thing, both Twain and Carlin, very hairy guys.
They were.
They were.
Very hairy. As was Senior Borgnine.
Yes, yes, exactly.
Very swarthy.
In fact, Carlin had that those little poems. Here's my beard. Don't be scared. It's just my beard. There was another one he did about hair. I can't remember that one. I remember the beard one. Here's my beard. Don't be scared. It's just my beard. But what was it? There was another. There was one about hair.
Well, I don't know. I don't know why. I had never heard that one before.
No, that's on one of his. That's definitely on one of his albums about that. And before that, he had another short thing about hair because he was talking about how different people see hair as a stereotype of a person, where actually it's just hair. Gar has been a long time hairy Gar for as long as Gar's been around. Gar has been a hairy Gar.
I'm glad we all know that.
Yes. Yeah. Well, I am having to paint in more and more of the hairline over the years. It's getting thinner and thinner, but it's still there. That was a time where I shaved once, and just to keep it going, I went and I bought a fake beard, and I had to cut it up, and I glued it. I rubber cemented it to my face. And I didn't realize that rubber cement is not a good thing on skin. And it was a little bit difficult.
This can't end well. This cannot end well.
Yeah, I didn't. Well, it did. I mean, I had to take some type of like isopropyl alcohol or something to it to get rubber cement
off.
It was hanging. I was like, man, shouldn't this just peel off? And it's like, it's rubber cement. What the heck?
No, just your face will peel off. That's all.
Yeah, just your face will peel off. So
Here's another glue you should not use. You should not use airplane glue because you'll be high and you'll never know. You'll never know where you're going to be pasting your beard to. You know, be
yeah,
up
yeah,
on your
exactly.
forehead.
Yeah, that's a
yeah,
problem.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, that's when you've got the long. I've been doing this lately. I have been. Reinvestigating kind of my childhood with old Kung Fu movies dubbed in English, and they are really bad. They're from the old Kung Fu movie type afternoon matinee
yeah,
they used to have
movie
on TV.
Theater, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Kung Fu theater, yeah.
And they used to take super glue and beards, and they used to put it up on their eyebrows. They used to have these big, long eyebrows. Big long white eyebrows. It's like, y'all Kung Fu better than my Kung Fu. And it was just, wow. Love that stuff.
The dubbed movies I had troubles with. I couldn't.
Oh.
I didn't. They weren't my thing.
No. I get two things out. One is there's a story. There is a story. Every one of these, believe it or not, there is a story. That actually moves towards either mythology or actual history. Okay, that's one thing. But the other thing is the dub voices are so bad, that's where it becomes comedy, sort of, because it's so bad, you know.
I like my comedy better when it's intended to be comedy, though.
It's not intended to be comedy. It's supposed to be, you know, these are our mythologies. These are our histories. These are our stories of things that happened way back when, you know, and this is a documentation of that happened. But the funny thing is most of the time what it is antagonist, protagonist, they introduce them, they tell the little story, they have a big kung fu fight, the bad guy dies, and then that's it. There's no, you don't shake hands, right? The bad guy dies and the end, and it just, that's it, you know, and it's just, And then the end, and it goes black, and that's all you get. So there was no moral to that story. Bad guy dies. That's it, you know.
As they should. Bad guy should.
As
die.
They should. As they
should. Yes.
I like when they end. They end like your kung fu better than my and that's it, you know, and it's over. That's. Oh, yeah, I've been watching a lot of them. They are so funny. Well, they're funny, but they're also, you know, I like the stories, crazy stories. And there's one called The Monkey King. The Monkey King is one of their great mythologies. It's about a monkey that tried to fool Buddha. And it was just like, wow, really? And he goes on all these.
Buddha ain't playing, huh?
Buddha ain't playing. Buddha said, "Okay, I want you to. You're like super monkey, right?" And he's like, "Yeah, I'm super monkey." And Buddha says, "All right, here you go. This is my palm. I want you to go ahead and you get on my palm, and then you run or jump as long and far as you can. And if you get to the end of it, then you win." And so Monkey's like, "Yeah, okay, I'm up. I do this, man. I can do this blindfolded. I'll do this blindfolded, one arm tied behind my back, hopping on one leg. I can do this." And so Monkey goes ahead and accepts the challenge. And he's sitting there and he's putting everything into it. And he goes, "Okay, I did it. I jumped off your hand." And he's like, and Buddha says, you didn't move because Buddha's hand is so big. It's just really just hilarious. But you have to know a little bit about it.
So Dale, what did you think of Congo Kurt?
Yeah.
Oh, my God, that was a very pleasant surprise. That took me way, way, way back. I was picturing myself in my bedroom as a teenager, or a preteen, I should say.
You were a preteen, yeah.
Yeah.
There's about a dozen of those we can sneak onto the show here.
We must.
Those are great, Dave.
We must, especially for folks that are from around here. Isn't GGSI paper from Northeast Ohio, or was?
Yes, it was.
Yeah.
And it was just a cool little short thing, usually around two and a half minutes. And they always have some different kind of kid's toy. And they, you know, telling you to forge your father's name onto a blank
forge
check.
Forge your father's
like
name on a check.
Yes. They tell you to do this? I don't remember that.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was in there. Yeah.
Part of my childhood education.
Write 950 on the check. Just send it.
Send it to Walla Walla, Washington. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. Get your free rhino. That was so funny. The rhino.
And if you don't have enough money, you can charge it.
You could charge it.
Your rhino. Did you just have a Flintstone flashback there? Charge.
I did. Betty and Wilma.
Yep. I thought I recognized that rally.
Uh-huh.
Charge it.
Yep. Yep. That was, Back on stone tablets again. But Dave, that was a great find. That was a lot of fun.
I found it by accident and found about a dozen of them. So.
Oh, wow.
Oh, that was a tremendous find. Thank you for sharing that. That was a treat, a nice surprise.
And
we'll
so
have,
reminiscent.
We'll have more to come.
So reminiscent of Chicken Man.
Yeah.
Because Chicken Man hurts my funny bone every time I hear it.
It's silly, just like that. It's along the same lines.
Oh, I love what the Dick.
Dick Dorkin.
And Bert Bertus.
Yeah,
It was absolutely amazing. And
I don't know who did the woman, but she was hilarious too. But
they were all people at the radio station. Miss Hellfinger,
Miss Hellfinger. And when she went nuts and she went to the psychiatrist and it happened to be like a knockoff of Dracula, it's like, it was all a bad dream.
It was all a bad dream.
Why do you keep saying that?
Because it was all a bad dream.
Yes.
And then he goes into his little role, rigmarole about his childhood trauma, about the number 7 or the number 9, or I don't remember. It was something weird.
Oh, the counting count? Number one.
Yeah, no. It was like she was trying to tell him what her problem was, and he kept, like, directing the conversation, like, and so you were the age of 9. No, I was 6. No, it's like, and you had 9 balloons. He's like, no, there were no balloons. Something. It was just really weird and very funny. And he was all a bad dream. And I was like, no, it wasn't a bad dream. Oh my gosh, that Chicken Man was just insane. Just insane.
Yep. Unfortunately, it's still copyright protected.
So. It is. That guy's hanging on to it. Or whomever is hanging on to it. Someone is.
Yeah, I'm not sure who's hanging on to it because he's gone.
He's gone. Exactly.
Yeah.
So.
I can verify my whereabouts.
And I cannot.
Okay, Dale, you don't have to have an alibi for everything that happens in the world, you know?
It's helpful, but
you don't have to.
In these days and times?
Oh, yeah.
I think it's a must. You know. Yeah.
Sorry, old habit with the alibi.
Uh-huh. Well, guys, I'm going to call it a night for me. 11:07 here.
Yeah, me too, and that's Dale
Funny,
way past
that's
your bedtime.
What time
man.
It is here. Yeah, I'm surprised I'm still...
That's
because
we're all in that, as Gar would say, the Eastern Standard Time.
Eastern Standard Time. Yes, exactly. And, you know, another 45 minutes, we're all going to turn to Ernest Borgnine. That'd be horrible.
I can't afford that.
I'm hairy, high and low.
That never gets dull. You should hang on to that. You should hang on to that always. That should be, just pipe that in whenever.
Well, I'm somewhat known for having a mop of what remains of my hair.
Uh-huh.
So I'm down with hair, man.
I'm down with hair, too.
Screaming, flaxing, waxing, whatever.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's true. Yeah. Not me. I've always had it short.
The one time
I was younger and we were moving, and my hair was a little longer, and the guy says, move over, miss. We'll take care of this. So, you know, I cut my hair right after that.
Yeah.
For the longest time through college until, about the year 2000 and maybe 4 or 5, I had a mustache, which I kept. I had it during the pictures of the making of the radio plays and all that. And I got rid of it because a guy who was like a year and a half younger than me.
Could you move over?
No, they looked at us and said, "So are you his father?" And I went home and shaved off my mustache immediately.
Oh my gosh!
Keeps it in a little plastic bag, you know.
Yeah, I will.
That's my mustache from back in...
No,
my hair is a fright.
No, there were actually safety reasons, you know, not to have the long hair. Like, if you went to work in a restaurant, it could get caught in the Hobart and rip your head off.
Factory I used to work in, oh, my God, and that was like late 70s where it was still fashionable for young men wore their hair rather long. And you do not want to get caught in like a milling machine or a lathe because your face is gone.
Oh, yeah.
And if it grabs you by the hair, your chances of survival actually are rather slim.
And then another time I couldn't keep a job, I worked as a plumber, and you'd get your hair caught in a plumbing sewer machine. And rip your hair off, you know.
Yep.
And then there was another time I couldn't keep a job, and I couldn't. No, never mind. I could go on and on.
I've never heard that before.
I wasn't me that said that.
Oh boy. Yep.
I have to go down as Marky. That's the longest I've ever heard Dale laugh at one time.
Oh my God. Well, the Lost in Space thing though, that was a good night. With the sappy Lost in Space music and Gar weeping openly. Oh. But that music did evoke that, you know. I remember that in the show. That was
sure.
I think that was one of the best pieces of quality about the show, other than the effects weren't too bad the first season.
Mm-hmm.
And the monsters weren't that ridiculous in the first season, but the incredible music from John Williams was
yeah.
in there.
Yep.
No, yeah. That wasn't John Williams, it was Johnny Williams back then, remember?
Yes, he was going by Johnny Williams, but that's where he
Johnny
cut his
Williams.
Teeth.
Yeah,
that's where he cut his teeth with exciting music. And there are some episodes where they actually use some music from The Day the Earth Stood Still.
Wow.
Yeah.
But the bulk of it was the Johnny Williams stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I have little bits here and there. There may have been an album once of Lost in Space's original music.
Soundtrack. You know, I wouldn't be surprised.
For the different, you know, themes or different people.
I'm surprised K-Tel didn't put out a Lost in Space album.
Yeah, but they would have cut down the song, so.
Yes.
Yeah.
They would have cut them short.
Yeah.
Warning, danger, wit.
Yeah, exactly.
What? What?
What? Danger who? Danger
you
what?
Can take a 5-minute song and make it like a minute 45 or something.
Yeah.
Damn you, yeah, K-Tel. Damn you and your
got,
ways.
No, I don't, well, do I have it on here?
Yeah, okay, there it is, Dale. I do see it on Amazon. The Lost in Space 50th Anniversary Collection original soundtrack. One new and used for $699.99. And I think there's probably shipping with that, too.
Thank you, no. That's out of my range.
There was the 40th Anniversary Edition. There are six new and used for $48.97. And that was, then there's Lost in Space Original Television Soundtrack Volume 2. And that was 40. Six new and used from $44.54.
No.
And Volume 1 is on audio CD from $50.
Yipes.
I ran across this. I'm going to be plugging this weekend. From 1970, the K-Tel Records presents 25 polka greats.
There's got to be some Frank Yankovic in there.
And that was
yes.
just side one.
Yes.
That was just side one. Yeah.
Yeah.
And then 1977, Ronco's Funky Favorites. Yeah.
There's another one for you, Dale. The Land of the Giants original television soundtrack.
I have the theme from Land of the Giants.
Yeah.
I have a lot of TV themes. I've collected a lot of them.
And that was John Williams also, I think. Yeah,
it sounds like it.
It does say, I think I'm looking at it. It's such a small picture, but here, let me see.
Was he spelling Williams?
Was
he spelling Williams with a Y?
No.
John Williams is, yes. It was John Williams, the artist, yeah.
Johnny Williams.
Yeah.
Hold on there. See what we
so
can
So there
do.
We go.
Wait. And you say it was John Williams.
Yep. Fantasy worlds of Irwin Allen, Lost in Space, the time tunnel voyage to the bottom of the sea.
Oh, yeah.
Voyage to the bottom of the sea was another great show.
Land of the Giants was really weird.
I've
gone back and watched
show.
It.
You did or did not?
I loved it as a kid, but it seemed like a Lost in Space ripoff. The character Fitzhugh was like trying to be Dr. Smith.
Oh, I did not. Oh, yeah. Yeah, they should have let the kitty cat get him. You know,
yes.
That should have been in it. Or feed him to the giant spider or something. Yeah, there it is.
There you go.
Nope.
Yeah, that's got to be Williams.
Yep. Yeah.
He made good use of horns in a lot of his, like, exciting music. He knew when to make, like, you know, he made Indiana Jones, like, a march, that theme. So was Star Wars to a degree.
Yeah, it's too bad that they lost the only spoken lyrics for this by yours truly, Ernest Borgnine.
Yes. Come on, you know the words. I love doing that for instrumentals.
Uh-huh. Sing along, guys.
Everybody sing along. Yep.
All right, guys. I got to go. You guys, thanks. I had a great time. Dale, thanks so much last week for dropping by the show. Sorry it was a repeat.
That's all right.
You know, I was glad that you made it.
It was almost
like,
better.
Yeah, there you go. I don't have the boingers. I don't have the boingers. The boingers! Yeah. So, yeah, it probably was. Yeah. Well, no, what's crazy is a whole lot of people that were in the show watching it live last week were in the show a year ago when I did it. So I called out their name, and a whole bunch of people were like, why didn't you call out my name? And I was like, it's a repeat.
Yeah.
So I was under. I said Gar called my name, and I said Gar. I said, gee, wonder why Gar didn't acknowledge that. I said Gar, you know.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. It's a repeat.
Yeah.
If I could repeat. Do that, it wouldn't be a repeat.
Exactly. So I was kind of like really happy to see Dale made it, and I was like, oh, it was a repeat too. Damn.
All right.
But yeah, thanks for dropping by. That was cool.
Sure.
All right, guys. I got to go before I fall out of the chair.
Yep, we're running out of time too. So
I'm getting old by the
minute.
I
don't know. Are you going out with Durant, or are we going to go out with a different Harry way?
Yeah, let's go out a Harry way.
Durant.
Anything Harry.
But you never know what the stinger might be.
Harry.
Say goodnight,
okay.
Jimmy.
Good night. Good night. Good night.
Good night.
It's time to say good night.
Good night. Here today, gone tomorrow.
What more to say but good night?
So, Harry,
we've had a few laughs, and it's time for toodaloo.
Toodaloo.
In my rainbow, up we sing, and in kutinkadoo. Good night.
We're sorry, old Brenner.
Good night. Good night, folks.
Nowhere.
And good night, Mrs. Calabash, wherever.
Harry Noon and night.
Night.
My hair is a fright. I'm Harry high and low. But don't ask me why.
Cause he don't.